a ship. You'd mentioned a home in the slums, so when I arrived this evening, I wandered until I picked up your scent.
He scanned her with a warrior's unflinching assessment, his mouth tight.
You have a lot to tell me,
he said, and she nodded. Everything. She wanted to tell him everything. She gripped him harder, savoring the corded muscle of his forearms, the eternal strength of him. He brushed back a loose strand of her hair, his calloused fingers scraping against her cheek in the lightest caress. The gentleness of it made her choke on another sob.
But you're not hurt, he said softly. You're safe.
She nodded again and buried her face in his chest. I thought I gave you an order to stay in Wendland.
I had my reasons. Best spoken somewhere secure,
he said under her hood.
Your friends at the fortress say hello, by the way. I think they miss having an extra scullery maid. Especially Luca. Especially in the mornings.
She laughed and squeezed him. He was here, and he wasn't something she'd made up, some wild dream she'd had, and...
Why are you crying?
He asked, trying to push her back far enough to read her face again. But she held on to him, so fiercely she could feel the weapons beneath his clothes. It would all be fine, even if it went to hell, so long as he was here with her. I'm crying, she sniffled. Because you smell so rutting bad, my eyes are watering. Rowan let out a roar of laughter that made the vermin in the alley go silent. She at last pulled away, flashing a grin.
Bathing isn't an option for a stowaway,
he said, releasing her only to flick her nose. She gave him a playful shove, but he glanced down the alley where Nezrin and Adian were waiting. He'd likely been monitoring every move they made, and if he had deemed them a true threat to her safety, they'd have been dead minutes ago.
Are you just going to make them stand there all night?
Since when are you a stickler for manners? She slung an arm around his waist, unwilling to let go of him lest he turn into wind and vanish. His casual arm around her shoulders was a glorious solid weight as they approached the others. If Rowan fought Nezrin, or even Kaol, there would be no contest. But Adian, she hadn't seen him fight yet, and from the look her cousin was giving Rowan, despite all of his professed admiration, she wondered if Adian was also wondering who'd emerge from that fight alive. Rowan stiffened a bit beneath her grip. Neither male broke their stare as they neared. Territorial nonsense. Aelin squeezed Rowan's side hard enough that he hissed and pinched her shoulder right back. Fey warriors, invaluable in a fight, and raging pains in her ass at all other times.
Let's get inside, she said.
Nezrin had retreated slightly to observe what was sure to be a battle of warrior arrogance for the ages.
I'll see you later,
the rebel said to none of them in particular, the corners of her mouth twitching upward before she headed off into the slums. Part of Aelin debated calling her back, the same part that had made her invite Nezrin along. The woman had seemed lonely, a bit adrift, but Falik had no reason to stay, not right now. Adian fell into step in front of her and Rowan, silently leading the way back to the warehouse. Even through his layers of clothes and weapons, Rowan's muscles were tense beneath her fingers as he monitored Rifthold. She debated asking him what exactly he picked up with those heightened senses, what layers of the city she might never know existed. She didn't envy him his excellent sense of smell, not in the slums, at least. But it wasn't the time or place to ask, not until they got to safety, until she talked to him, alone. Rowan examined the warehouse without comment before stepping aside to let her go in front of him. She'd forgotten how beautifully he moved that powerful body of his. A storm-given flesh. Tugging him by the hand, she led him up the stairs and into the great room. She knew he had taken in every detail, every entrance and exit and method of escape, by the time they were halfway across it. Adian stood before the fireplace, hood still on, hands still within easy reach of his weapons. She said over her shoulder to her cousin as they passed, "Adian, meet Rowan. Rowan, meet Adian. His Highness needs a bath, or I'll vomit if I have to sit next to him for more than a minute." She offered no other explanation before dragging Rowan into her bedroom and shutting the door behind them. Aelin leaned against the door, as Rowan paused in the center of the bedroom, his face darkened by the shadows of his heavy gray hood. The space between them went taut, every inch of it crackling. She bit her bottom lip as she took him in. The familiar clothes, the assortment of wicked weapons, the immortal preternatural stillness. His presence alone stole the air from the room, from her lungs.
"Take off your hood,"
he said with a soft growl, his eyes fixed on her mouth. She crossed her arms. "You show me yours and I'll show you mine, Prince."
From tears to sass in a few minutes.
"I'm glad the month apart hasn't dimmed your usual good spirits." He yanked back his hood, and she started. "Your hair! You cut it all off!" She pulled off her own hood as she crossed the distance between them. Indeed, the long silver-white hair was now cropped short. It made him look younger, made his tattoo stand out more, and, fine, it made him more handsome, too. Or maybe that was just her missing him.
"Since you seemed to think that we would be doing a good amount of fighting here, shorter hair is more useful. Though I can't say that your hair might be considered the same, you might as well have dyed it blue."
"Hush. Your hair was so pretty. I was hoping you'd let me braid it one day. I suppose I'll have to buy a pony instead."
She cocked her head.
"When you shift, will your hawk form be plucked then?"
His nostrils flared, and she clamped her lips together to keep from laughing. He surveyed the room, the massive bed she hadn't bothered to make that morning, the marble fireplace adorned with trinkets and books, the open door to the giant closet.
"You weren't lying about your taste for luxury."
"Not all of us enjoy living in warrior squalor," she said, grabbing his hand again. She remembered these calluses, the strength and size of his hands. His fingers closed around hers. Though it was a face she'd memorized, a face that had haunted her dreams these past few weeks, it was new, somehow. And he just looked at her, as if he were thinking the same thing. He opened his mouth, but she pulled him into the bathroom, lighting a few candles by the sink and on the ledge above the tub. "I meant it about the bath," she said, twisting the faucets and plugging the drain. "You stink." Rowan watched as she bent to grab a towel from the small cabinet by the toilet.
"Tell me everything."
She plucked up a green vial of bath salts and another of bath oil, and dumped in generous amounts of each, turning the rushing water milky and opaque. "I will when you're soaking in the bath and don't smell like a vagrant."
"If memory serves, you smelled even worse when we first met, and I didn't shove you into the nearest trough in Verez."
She glared. "Funny.
You made my eyes water for the entire damn journey to Mistward."
"Just get in." Chuckling, he obeyed. She shrugged off her own cloak, then began unstrapping her various weapons as she headed out of the bathroom. She might have taken longer than usual to remove her weapons, peel off her suit, and change into a loose white shirt and pants. By the time she finished, Rowan was in the bath, the water so clouded she could see nothing of the lower body beneath. The powerful muscles of his scarred back shifted as he scrubbed at his face with his hands, then his neck, then his chest. His skin had deepened to a golden brown. He must have spent time outdoors these past weeks. Without clothing, apparently. He splashed water on his face again, and she started into movement, reaching for the washcloth she'd set on the sink.
"Here,"
she said a bit hoarsely. He just dunked it in the milky water and attacked his face, the back of his neck, the strong column of his throat. The full tattoo down his left arm gleamed with the water sliding off him.
Gods, he took up the entire bathtub.
She mutely handed him her favorite lavender-scented soap, which he sniffed at, sighed in resignation, and then began using. She took a seat on the curved lip of the tub and told him everything that had happened since they'd left. Well, mostly everything. He washed while she spoke, scrubbing himself down with brutal efficiency. He lifted the lavender soap to his hair, and she squeaked.
"You don't use that in your hair," she hissed, jolting from her perch to reach for one of the many hair tonics lining the little shelf above the bath.
"Rose, lemon verbena, or..."
She sniffed the glass bottle.
"Jasmine."
She squinted down at him.
He was staring up at her,
his green eyes full of the words he knew he didn't have to say.
Do I look like I care what you pick?
She clicked her tongue. Jasmine it is, you buzzard. He didn't object, as she took up a place at the head of the tub and dumped some of the tonic into his short hair. The sweet, night-filled scent of jasmine floated up, caressing and kissing her. Even Rowan breathed it in as she scrubbed the tonic into his scalp. I could still probably braid this, she mused. Very teensy-tiny braids, so... He growled, but leaned back against the tub. His eyes closed. You're no better than a house cat, she said, massaging his head. He let out a low noise in his throat that might very well have been a purr. Washing his hair was intimate, a privilege she doubted he'd ever allowed many people, something she'd never done for anyone else. But lines had always been blurred for them, and neither of them had particularly cared. He'd seen every bare inch of her several times, and she'd seen most of him. They'd shared a bed for months. On top of that, they were Karanam. He'd let her inside his power, past his inner barriers, to where half a thought from her could have shattered his mind. So washing his hair, touching him, it was an intimacy, but it was essential, too. You haven't said anything about your magic, she murmured, her fingers still working his scalp. He tensed.
What about it?
Fingers in his hair, she leaned down to peer at his face. I take it it's gone. How does it feel to be as powerless as a mortal? He opened his eyes to glare.
It's not funny.
Do I look like I'm laughing?
I spent the first few days sick to my stomach and barely able to move. It was like having a blanket thrown over my senses.
And now?
And now I'm dealing with it.
She poked him in the shoulder. It was like touching velvet-wrapped steel. Grumpy, grumpy. He gave a soft snarl of annoyance, and she pursed her lips to keep the smile in. She pushed down on his shoulders, beckoning him to dunk under the water. He obeyed, and when he emerged, she rose from the tiles and grabbed the towel she'd left on the sink. I'm going to find you some clothes.
Oh, no, those are going right to the laundress.
And you'll get them back only if she can make them smell decent again. Until then, you'll wear whatever I give you. She handed him the towel, but didn't let go as his hand closed around it.
You've become a tyrant, princess, he said.
She rolled her eyes and released the towel, turning as he stood in a mighty movement, water sloshing everywhere. It was an effort not to peek over her shoulder. Don't you even dare, a voice hissed in her head. Right. She'd call that voice common sense, and she'd listen to it from now on. Striding into her closet, she went to the dresser in the back and knelt before the bottom drawer, opening it to reveal folded men's undershorts, shirts, and pants. For a moment, she stared at Sam's old clothes, breathing in the faint smell of him clinging to the fabric. She hadn't mustered the strength to go to his grave yet, but...
You don't have to give those to me,
Rowan said from behind her. She started a bit and twisted in place to face him. He was so damn stealthy. Aelin tried not to look too jolted by the sight of him with the towel wrapped around his hips, at the tan and muscled body that gleamed with the oils of the bath, at the scars crisscrossing it like the stripes of a great cat. Even common sense was at a loss for words. Her mouth was a little dry as she said, Clean clothes are scarce in the house right now, and these are of no use sitting here. She pulled out a shirt and held it up. I hope it fits. Sam had been 18 when he died. Rowan was a warrior honed by 3 centuries of training and battle. She pulled out undershorts and pants. I'll get you proper clothes tomorrow. I'm pretty sure you'll start a riot if the women of Rifthold see you walking down the streets in nothing but a towel. Rowan huffed a laugh and strode to the clothes hanging along one wall of the closet. Dresses, tunics, jackets, shirts.
You wore all this?
She nodded and uncoiled to her feet. He flicked through some of the dresses and embroidered tunics.
These are very beautiful, he admitted.
I would have pegged you for a proud member of the anti-finery crowd.
Clothes are weapons, too,
he said, pausing on a black velvet gown. Its tight sleeves and front were unadorned, the neckline skimming just beneath the collarbones. Unremarkable, save for the tendrils of embroidered, shimmering gold creeping over the shoulders. Rowan angled the dress to look at the back, the true masterpiece. The gold embroidery continued from the shoulders, sweeping to form a serpentine dragon, its maw roaring toward the neck, the body curving down until the narrow tail formed the border of the lengthened train. Rowan loosed a breath.
I like this one best.
She fingered the solid black velvet sleeve. I saw it in a shop when I was 16 and bought it immediately. But when the dress was delivered a few weeks later, it seemed too old. It overpowered the girl I was. So I never wore it, and it's hung here for 3 years. He ran a scarred finger down the golden spine of the dragon.
You're not that girl anymore,
he said softly.
Someday, I want to see you wear this.
She dared to look up at him, her elbow brushing his forearm. I missed you. His mouth tightened.
We weren't apart that long.
Right. To an immortal, several weeks were nothing. So, am I not allowed to miss you?
I once told you that the people you care about are weapons to be used against you. Missing me was a foolish distraction.
You're a real charmer, you know that. She hadn't expected tears or emotion, but it would have been nice to know he'd missed her at least a fraction as badly as she had. She swallowed, her spine locking, and pushed Sam's clothes into his arms. You can get dressed in here. She left him in the closet and went right to the bathroom, where she splashed cold water on her face and neck. She returned to her bedroom to find him frowning. Well, the pants fit, barely. They were too short and did wonders for showing off his backside, but...
The shirt is too small, he said. I didn't want to rip it.
He handed it to her, and she looked a bit helplessly at the shirt, then at his bare torso. I'll go out first thing. She sighed sharply through her nose. Well, if you don't mind meeting Adian shirtless, I suppose we should go say hello.
We need to talk.
Good talk or bad talk?
The kind that will make me glad you don't have access to your power so you don't spew flames everywhere.
Her stomach tightened, but she said, That was one incident, and if you ask me, your absolutely wonderful former lover deserved it.
More than deserved it.
The encounter with the visiting group of highborn Fae at Mistward had been miserable, to say the least. And when Rowan's former lover had refused to stop touching him, despite his request to do so, when she threatened to have Aelin whipped for stepping in. Well, Aelin's new favorite nickname, Fire-Breathing Bitch Queen, had been fairly accurate during that dinner. A twitch of his lips, but shadows flickered in Rowan's eyes. Aelin sighed again and looked at the ceiling. Now or later?
Later. It can wait a bit.
She was half tempted to demand he tell her whatever it was, but she turned toward the door. Adian rose from his seat at the kitchen table as Aelin and Rowan entered. Her cousin looked Rowan over with an appreciative eye and said, You never bothered to tell me how handsome your fairy prince is, Aelin. Aelin scowled. Adian just jerked his chin at Rowan. Tomorrow morning, you and I are going to train on the roof. I want to know everything you know. Aelin clicked her tongue. All I've heard from your mouth these past few days is Prince Rowan this and Prince Rowan that. And yet this is what you decide to say to him? No bowing and scraping? Adian slid back into his chair. If Prince Rowan wants formalities, I can grovel. But he doesn't look like someone who particularly cares. With a flicker of amusement in his green eyes, the Fey Prince said,
Whatever my queen wants.
Oh, please. Adian caught the words, too. My queen. The two princes stared at each other, one gold and one silver, one her twin and one her soul bonded. There was nothing friendly in the stares, nothing human. Two fey males locked in some unspoken dominance battle. She leaned against the sink. If you're going to have a pissing contest, can you at least do it on the roof? Rowan looked at her, brows high. But it was Adian who said,
She says we're no better than dogs,
so I wouldn't be surprised if she actually believes we'd piss on her furniture.
Rowan didn't smile, though, as he tilted his head to the side and sniffed.
Adian needs a bath, too, I know, she said. He insisted on smoking a pipe at the tap room. He said it gave him an air of dignity.
Rowan's head was still angled as he asked,
Your mothers were cousins, Prince. But who sired you?
Adian lounged in his chair. Does it matter?
Do you know?
Rowan pressed.
Adian shrugged.
She never told me. Or anyone.
I'm guessing you have some idea? Aelin asked.
Rowan said,
He doesn't look familiar to you?
He looks like me.
Yes, but...
He sighed.
You met his father. A few weeks ago. Gavriel.
Adian stared at the shirtless warrior, wondering if he'd strained his injuries too much tonight and was now hallucinating. The prince's words sank in. Adian just kept staring. A wicked tattoo in the old language stretched down the side of Rowan's face and along his neck, shoulder, and muscled arm. Most people would take one look at that tattoo and run in the other direction. Adian had seen plenty of warriors in his day, but this male was a warrior, law unto himself. Just like Gavriel, or so the legends claimed. Gavriel, Rowan's friend, one of his cadre, whose other form was a mountain lion.
He asked me, Aelin murmured. He asked me how old I was, and seemed relieved when I said 19.
19 was too young, apparently, to be Gavrielle's daughter. Though she looked so similar to the woman he'd once bedded, Adian didn't remember his mother well. His last memories were of a gaunt, gray face as she sighed her final breath. As she refused the fey healers who could have cured the wasting sickness in her. But he had heard she'd once looked almost identical to Aelin and her mother, Evelyn.
Adian's voice was hoarse as he asked, The lion is my father?
A nod from Rowan.
Does he know? I bet seeing Aelin was the first time he wondered if he'd sired a child with your mother. He probably still doesn't have any idea, unless that prompted him to start looking.
His mother had never told anyone but Evelyn, who his father was. Even when she was dying, she'd kept it to herself. She'd refused those fey healers because of it. Because they might identify him. And if Gavriel knew he had a son, if Maeve knew. An old ache ripped through him. She'd kept him safe. Had died to keep him out of Maeve's hands. Warm fingers slid around his hand and squeezed. He hadn't realized how cold he was. Aelin's eyes... Their eyes, the eyes of their mothers, were soft, open. This changes nothing, she said. About who you are, about what you mean to me, nothing.
But it did.
It changed everything, explained everything. The strength, the speed, the senses, the lethal predatory instincts he'd always struggled to keep in check. Why Roe had been so hard on him during his training. Because if Evelyn knew who his father was, then Roe certainly did too. And fey males, even half-fey males, were deadly. Without the control Roe and his lords had drilled into him from an early age. Without the focus, they'd known, and kept it from him. Along with the fact that after he swore the blood oath to Aelin one day, he might very well remain young, while she grew old and died. Aelin brushed her thumb against the back of his hand, and then pivoted toward Rowan. What does this mean where Maeve is concerned? Gavriel is bound through the blood oath, so she would have a claim on his offspring?
Like hell she does, Adian said.
If Maeve tried to claim him, he'd rip out her throat. His mother had died for fear of the Fey Queen. He knew it in his bones. Rowan said,
I don't know, even if she thought so. It would be an act of war to steal Adian from you.
This information doesn't leave this room, Aelin said.
Calm, calculating, already sorting through every plan, the other side of their fair coin. It's ultimately your choice, Adian, whether to approach Gavriel. But we have enough enemies gathering around us as it is.
I don't need to start a war with Maeve.
But she would. She would go to war for him.
He saw it in her eyes. It nearly knocked the breath from him, along with the thought of what the carnage would be like on both sides if the Dark Queen and the heir of Mala Firebringer collided.
"It stays with us,"
Adian managed to say. He could feel Rowan assessing and weighing him, and bit back a snarl. Slowly, Adian lifted his gaze to meet the prince's. The sheer dominance in that stare was like being hit in the face with a stone. Adian held it. Like hell he'd back down, like hell he'd yield. And there would be a yielding. Somewhere. At some point. Probably when Adian took that blood oath. Aelin clicked her tongue at Rowan. "Stop doing that alpha male nonsense. Once was enough." Rowan didn't so much as blink.
"I'm not doing anything."
But the prince's mouth quirked into a smile, as if saying to Adian,
"You think you can take me, cub?"
Adian grinned. "Any place, any time, prince." Aelin muttered, "Insufferable," and gave Rowan a playful shove in the arm. He didn't move an inch. "Are you actually going to get into a pissing contest with every person we meet? Because if that's the case, then it'll take us an hour just to make it down one block of this city, and I doubt the residents will be particularly happy." Adian fought the urge to take a deep breath as Rowan broke his stare to give their queen an incredulous look. She crossed her arms, waiting.
"It'll take time to adjust to a new dynamic,"
Rowan admitted. Not an apology, but from what Aelin had told him, Rowan didn't often bother with such things. She looked downright shocked by the small concession, actually. Adian tried to lounge in his chair, but his muscles were taut, his blood thrumming in his veins. He found himself saying to the prince,
"Aelin never said anything about sending for you."
"Does she answer to you, General?"
A dangerous, quiet question. Adian knew that when males like Rowan spoke softly, it usually meant violence and death were on their way. Aelin rolled her eyes.
"You know he didn't mean it that way, so don't pick a fight, you prick."
Adian stiffened. He could fight his own battles. If Aelin thought he needed protecting, if she thought Rowan was the superior warrior. Rowan said,
"I'm bloodsworn to you, which means several things. One of which being that I don't particularly care for the questioning of others, even your cousin."
The words echoed in his head, his heart.
"Bloodsworn?"
Aelin went pale. Adian asked,
"What did he just say?"
Rowan had taken the blood oath to Aelin.
His blood oath.
Aelin squared her shoulders and said clearly, steadily, "Rowan took the blood oath to me before I left Wendlin." A roaring sound went through him.
"You let him do what?"
Aelin exposed her scarred palms. "As far as I knew, Adian, you were loyally serving the king. As far as I knew, I was never going to see you again."
"You let him take the blood oath to you?"
Adian bellowed. She had lied to his face that day on the roof. He had to get out. Out of his skin, out of this apartment, out of this god's damned city. Adian lunged for one of the porcelain figurines atop the hearth mantle, needing to shatter something to just get that roaring out of his system. She flung out a vicious finger, advancing on him. "You break one thing, you shatter just one of my possessions, and I will shove the shards down your rotting throat." A command, from a queen to her general. Adian spat on the floor, but obeyed, if only because ignoring that command might very well shatter something far more precious. He instead said,
"How dare you? How dare you let him take it?"
"I dare because it is my blood to give away. I dare because you did not exist for me then. Even if neither of you had taken it yet, I would still give it to him because he is my Karanam, and he has earned my unquestioning loyalty."
Adian went rigid.
"And what about our unquestioning loyalty? What have you done to earn that? What have you done to save our people since you've returned? Were you ever going to tell me about the blood oath, or was that just another of your many lies?"
Aelin snarled with an animalistic intensity that reminded him she too had fey blood in her veins.
"Go have your temper tantrum somewhere else. Don't come back until you can act like a human being, or half of one at least."
Adian swore at her. A filthy, foul curse that he immediately regretted. Rowan lunged for him, knocking back his chair hard enough to flip it over. But Aelin threw out a hand. The prince stood down. That easily she leashed the mighty immortal warrior. Adian laughed, the sound brittle and cold, and smiled at Rowan in a way that usually made men throw the first punch. But Rowan just set his chair upright, sat down, and leaned back, as if he already knew where he'd strike Adian's death blow. Aelin pointed at the door.
Get the hell out. I don't want to see you again for a good while.
The feeling was mutual. All his plans, everything he'd worked for. Without the Blood Oath, he was just a general. Just a landless prince of the Ash River line. Adian stalked to the front door and flung it open so hard he almost ripped it off its hinges. Aelin didn't call after him. Chapter 29 Rowan Whitethorn debated for a good minute if it was worthwhile to hunt down the demi-fey prince and tear him into bloody ribbons for what he'd called Aelin, or if he was better off here with his queen, while she paced in front of her bedroom fireplace. He understood. He really did, why the general was enraged. He'd have felt the same, but it wasn't a good enough excuse. Not even close. Perched on the edge of the plush mattress, he watched her move. Even without her magic, Aelin was a living wildfire. More so now with the red hair. A creature of such roaring emotions that he could sometimes only watch her and marvel. And her face. That god's damned face. While they'd been in Wendlin, it had taken him a while to realize she was beautiful. Months, actually, to really notice it. And for these past few weeks, against his better judgment, he'd thought often about that face, especially that smart-ass mouth. But he hadn't remembered just how stunning she was until she'd taken off her hood earlier, and it had struck him stupid. These weeks apart had been a brutal reminder of what life had been like, until he had found her drunk and broken on that rooftop in Verez. The nightmares had started the very night she'd left. Such relentless dreams that he'd nearly vomited when he flung himself out of them, Lyria's screaming ringing in his ears. The memory of it sent cold licking down his spine. But even that was burned away by the queen before him. Aelin was well on her way to wearing a track in the rug before the fireplace.
If that's any indication of what to expect from our court, Rowan said at last,
flexing his fingers in an attempt to dislodge the hollow shakiness he hadn't been able to master since his magic had been smothered.
Then we'll never have a dull moment.
She flung out a hand in a dismissive wave of irritation. Don't tease me right now. She scrubbed at her face and huffed a breath. Rowan waited, knowing she was gathering the words, hating the pain and sorrow and guilt on every line of her body. He'd sell his soul to the dark god to never have her look like that again.
Every time I turn around, she said,
approaching the bed and leaning against the carved post.
I feel like I'm one wrong move or word away from leading them to ruin. People's lives, your life, depend on me. There's no room for error.
There it was, the weight that had been slowly crushing her. It killed him that he'd have to add to it when he told her the news he carried, the reason he'd disobeyed her first order to him. He could offer her nothing but the truth.
You will make mistakes. You will make decisions, and sometimes you will regret those choices. Sometimes there won't be a right choice, just the best of several bad options. I don't need to tell you that you can do this. You know you can. I wouldn't have sworn the oath to you if I didn't think you could.
She slid onto the bed beside him, her scent caressing him. Jasmine and lemon verbena and crackling embers. Elegant, feminine, and utterly wild. Warm and steadfast. Unbreakable. His queen. Save for the weakness they both shared. That bond between them. For in his nightmares, he sometimes heard Maeve's voice over the crack of a whip, cunning and cold.
Not for all the world, Aelin. But what about for Prince Rowan?
He tried not to think about it. The fact that Aelin would hand over one of the word keys for him.
He locked that knowledge up so tightly that it could escape only in his dreams, or when he woke reaching across a cold bed for a princess who was thousands of miles away. Aelin shook her head.
It was so much easier being alone.
I know,
he said, clamping down on the instinct to sling his arm around her shoulders and tuck her in close. He focused on listening to the city around them instead. He could hear more than mortal ears, but the wind no longer sang its secrets to him. He no longer felt it tugging at him, and stuck in his fey body, unable to shift, caged, restless, made worse by the fact that he couldn't shield this apartment from any enemy attacks while they were here. Not powerless, he reminded himself. He had been bound head to toe in iron before and had still killed. He could keep this apartment secure. The old-fashioned way. He was just off balance, at a time when being off balance could be fatal to her. For a while, they sat there in silence.
I said some appalling things to him, she said.
Don't worry about it,
he said, unable to help the growl.
He said some equally appalling things to you. Your tempers are evenly matched.
She let out a breathy chuckle.
Tell me about the fortress. What it was like when you went back to help rebuild.
So he did, until he got to the knowledge he'd been holding in all night. Just say it, she said with a direct, unyielding sort of look. He wondered if she realized that for all she complained about his alpha nonsense, she was pure-blooded alpha herself. Rowan took a long breath.
Lorkin's here.
She straightened.
That's why you came.
Rowan nodded. And why keeping his distance was the smarter move. Lorkin was wicked and cunning enough to use their bond against them.
I caught his scent sneaking around near Mistward and tracked it to the coast, then onto a ship. I picked up his trail when I docked this evening.
Her face was pale, and he added,
I made sure to cover my tracks before hunting you down.
Over 5 centuries old, Lorkin was the strongest male in the Fey realm, equal only to Rowan himself. They'd never been true friends, and after the events of a few weeks ago, Rowan would have liked nothing more than to slit the male's throat for leaving Aelin to die at the hands of the Vog princes. He might very well get the chance to do that, soon.
He doesn't know you well enough to immediately pick up your scent,
Rowan went on.
I'd bet good money that he got on that boat just to drag me here so I'd lead him to you.
But it was better than letting Lorkin find her while he remained in Wendland. Aelin swore with creative colorfulness.
Maeve probably thinks we'll also lead him right to the third word key. Do you think she gave him the order to put us down, either to get the key or afterward?
Maybe.
The thought was enough to shoot icy rage through him.
I won't let that happen.
Her mouth quirked to the side. You think I could take him?
If you had your magic, possibly.
Irritation rippled in her eyes. Enough so that he knew something else nagged at her.
But without magic, in your human form, you'd be dead before you could draw your sword.
He's that good.
He gave her a slow nod. She looked him over with an assassin's eye. Could you take him?
It'd be so destructive, I wouldn't risk it. You remember what I told you about Solomare?
Her face tightened. At the mention of the city he and Lorkin had obliterated at Maeve's request nearly 2 centuries ago. It was a stain that would forever linger, no matter what he told himself about how corrupt and evil its residents had been.
Without our magic, it's hard to call who'd win. It would depend on who wanted it more.
Lorkin, with his unending cold rage, and a talent for killing gifted to him by Hellas himself, never allowed himself to lose. Battles, riches, females. Lorkin always won, at any cost. Once, Rowan might have let him win. Let Lorkin end him just to put a stop to his own miserable life. But now,
Lorkin makes a move against you, and he dies.
She didn't blink at the violence that laced every word. Another part of him. A part that had been knotted from the moment she left. Uncoiled like some wild animal stretching out before a fire. Aelin cocked her head. Any idea where he'd hide?
None. I'll start hunting him tomorrow.
No, she said. Lorkin will easily find us without you hunting him.
But if he expects me to lead him to the third key so he can bring it back to Maeve, then maybe.
He could almost see the wheels turning in her head. She let out a hum.
I'll think about that tomorrow. Do you think Maeve wants the key merely to keep me from using it? Or to use it herself?
You know the answer to that.
Both, then. Aelin sighed. The question is, will she try to use us to hunt down the other two keys? Or does she have another one of your cadre out searching for them now?
Let's hope she hasn't sent anyone else.
If Gavriel knew that Adian is his son. She glanced toward the bedroom door, guilt and pain flickering on her lovely features. Would he follow Maeve? Even if it meant hurting or killing Adian in the process? Is her control over him that strong? It had been a shock earlier to realize whose son lounged at the kitchen table.
Gavriel.
He'd seen the warrior with lovers over the centuries, and seen him leave them at Maeve's order. He'd also seen him ink the names of his fallen men onto his flesh. And of all his cadre, only Gavriel had stopped that night to help Aelin against the Volg. Don't answer now, Aelin cut in with a yawn. We should go to bed.
Rowan had surveyed every inch of the apartment within moments of arriving, but he asked as casually as he could,
Where should I sleep?
She patted the bed behind them, just like old times. He clenched his jaw. He'd been bracing himself for this all night, for weeks now.
It's not like the fortress, where no one thinks twice about it.
And what if I want you to stay in here with me?
He didn't allow those words to sink in fully, the idea of being in that bed. He'd worked too damn hard at shutting out those thoughts.
Then I'll stay on the couch. But you need to be clear to the others about what me staying in here means.
There were so many lines that needed to be held.
She was off limits, completely off limits, for about a dozen different reasons.
He'd thought he would be able to deal with it, but...
No,
he would deal with it. He'd find a way to deal with it.
Because he wasn't a fool,
and he had some goddamned self-control. Now that Lorcan was in Rifthold, tracking them, hunting for the word key, he had bigger things to worry about. She shrugged, irreverent as always.
Then I'll issue a royal decree about my honorable intentions toward you over breakfast.
Rowan snorted. Though he didn't want to, he said,
And the captain?
What about him? She said too sharply.
Just consider how he might interpret things.
Why?
She'd done an excellent job of not mentioning him at all. But there was enough anger, enough pain in that one word, that Rowan couldn't back down.
Tell me what happened.
She didn't meet his eyes. He said what occurred here, to my friends, to him and Dorian while I was away in Wendland, that it was my fault, and that I was a monster.
For a moment, a blinding, blistering wrath shot through him. It was instinct to lunge for her hand, to touch the face that remained downturned. But he held himself in check. She still didn't look at him as she said,
Do you think-
Never,
he said.
Never, Aelin.
At last she met his stare, with eyes that were too old, too sad and tired to be 19.
It had been a mistake to ever call her a girl, and there were indeed moments when Rowan forgot how young she truly was. The woman before him shouldered burdens that would break the spine of someone 3 times her age.
If you're a monster, I'm a monster,
he said with a grin broad enough to show off his elongated canines. She let out a rough laugh, close enough that it warmed his face.
Just sleep in the bed, she said. I don't feel like digging up bedding for the couch. Maybe it was the laugh, or the silver lining her eyes, but he said,
Fine.
Fool.
He was such a stupid fool when it came to her. He made himself add,
But it sends a message, Aelin.
She lifted her brows in a way that usually meant fire was going to start flickering. But none came. Both of them were trapped in their bodies, stranded without magic.
He'd adapt.
He'd endure.
Oh?
She purred, and he braced himself for the tempest.
And what message does it send?
That I'm a whore? As if what I do in the privacy of my own room with my body is anyone's concern.
You think I don't agree?
His temper slipped its leash. No one else had ever been able to get under his skin so fast, so deep in the span of a few words.
But things are different now, Aelin. You're a queen of the realm. We have to consider how it looks, what impact it might have on our relationships with people who find it to be improper. Explaining that it's for your safety.
Oh, please, my safety? You think Lorkin or the king or whoever the hell else has it in for me is going to slither through the window in the middle of the night? I can protect myself, you know.
Gods above, I know you can.
He'd never been in doubt of that.
Her nostrils flared.
This is one of the stupidest fights we've ever had. All thanks to your idiocy, I might add.
She stalked toward her closet, her hips swishing as if to accentuate every word as she snapped.
Just get in bed.
He loosed a tight breath as she and those hips vanished into the closet. Boundaries. Lines. Off limits. Those were his new favorite words, he reminded himself, as he grimaced at the silken sheets, even as the huff of her breath still touched his cheek.
Aelin heard the bathroom door close, then running water, as Rowan washed up with the toiletries she'd left out for him. Not a monster. Not for what she'd done. Not for her power. Not when Rowan was there.
She'd thank the gods every damn day for the small mercy of giving her a friend who was her match, her equal, and who would never look at her with horror in his eyes, no matter what happened. She'd always be grateful for that. But improper? Improper, indeed. He didn't know how improper she could be.
She opened the top drawer of the oak dresser and slowly smiled. Rowan was in bed by the time she strutted toward the bathroom.
She heard, rather than saw, him jolt upright, the mattress groaning as he barked, "What in hell is that?"
She kept going toward the bathroom, refusing to apologize or look down at the pink, delicate, very short lace nightgown. When she emerged, face washed and clean, Rowan was sitting up, arms crossed over his bare chest.
"You forgot the bottom part."
She merely blew out the candles in the room one by one. His eyes tracked her the entire time.
"There is no bottom part," she said, flinging back the covers on her side. "It's starting to get so hot, and I hate sweating when I sleep. Plus, you're practically a furnace, so it's either this or I sleep naked. You can sleep in the bathtub if you have a problem with it."
His growl rattled the room.
"You've made your point."
"Hmm."
She slid into bed beside him, a healthy, proper distance away. For a few heartbeats, there was only the sound of rustling blankets as she nestled down.
"I need to fill in the ink a bit more in a few places,"
he said flatly. She could barely see his face in the dark.
"What?"
"Your tattoo,"
he said, staring at the ceiling.
"There are a few spots I need to fill in at some point."
Of course. He wasn't like other men. Not even close. There was so little she could do to jar him, taunt him.
A naked body was a naked body. Especially hers.
"Fine," she said, turning so that her back was to him.
They were silent again. Then Rowan said,
"I've never seen clothing like that."
She rolled over.
"You mean to tell me the females in Doranel don't have scandalous night clothes? Or anywhere else in the world?"
His eyes gleamed like an animal's in the dark. She'd forgotten what it was like to be Fey, to have one foot always in the forest.
"My encounters with other females usually didn't involve parading around in night clothes."
"And what clothes did they involve?"
"Usually none at all."
She clicked her tongue, shoving away the image.
"Having had the utter delight of meeting Ramel this spring, I have a hard time believing she didn't subject you to clothing parades."
He turned his face toward the ceiling again.
"We're not talking about this."
She chuckled. Aelin 1, Rowan 0. She was still smiling when he asked,
"Are all your night clothes like that?"
"So curious about my negligees, Prince. Whatever would the others say?
Maybe you should issue a decree to clarify." He growled, and she grinned into her pillow.
"Yes, I have more. Don't worry. If Lorkin is going to murder me in my sleep, I might as well look good."
Vain until the bitter end.
She pushed back against the thought of Lorkin, of what Maeve might want, and said, Is there a specific color you'd like me to wear? If I'm going to scandalize you, I should at least do it in something you like.
You're a menace.
She laughed again, feeling lighter than she had in weeks, despite the news Rowan had given her. She was fairly certain they were done talking for the night, when his voice rumbled across the bed.
Gold, not yellow. Real metallic gold.
You're out of luck, she said into her pillow. I would never own anything so ostentatious. She could almost feel him smiling at her as she fell asleep. 30 minutes later, Rowan was still staring up at the ceiling, teeth gritted as he calmed the roaring in his veins that was steadily shredding through his self-control. That god's damned nightgown. Shit. He was in such deep, unending shit. Rowan was asleep, his massive body half covered with blankets, as dawn streamed in through the lace curtains. Silently rising, Aelin stuck out her tongue at him as she shrugged on her pale blue silk robe, tied her already fading red hair into a knot atop her head, and padded into the kitchen. Until the shadow market had been burned to cinders, that miserable merchant there had been making a small fortune off all the bricks of dye she'd kept buying. Aelin winced at the thought of having to track down that vendor again. The woman had seemed the sort who would have escaped the flames, and would now charge double, triple on her already overpriced dyes to make up for her lost goods. And since Lorkin could track her by scent alone, changing the color of her hair would have no impact on him. Though she supposed that with the King's Guard on the lookout for her. Oh, it was too damn early to consider the giant pile of horseshit that had become her life. Groggy, she made tea mostly by muscle memory. She started on toast and prayed they had eggs left in the cooling box. They did. And bacon, to her delight. In this house, food tended to vanish as soon as it came in. One of the biggest pigs of all approached the kitchen on immortal silent feet. She braced herself as, arms full of food, she nudged the small cooling box shut with a hip. Adian eyed her warily while she went to the small counter beside the stove and began pulling down bowls and utensils.
There are mushrooms somewhere, he said.
Good. Then you can clean and cut them. And you get to chop the onion.
Is that punishment for last night?
She cracked the eggs one by one into a bowl. If that's what you think is an acceptable punishment, sure.
And is making breakfast at this ungodly hour your self-imposed punishment?
I'm making breakfast because I'm sick of you burning it and making the whole house smell. Adian laughed quietly, and came up beside her to begin slicing the onion. You stayed on the roof the whole time you were out, didn't you? She yanked an iron skillet from the rack over the stove, set it on a burner, and chucked a thick pat of butter onto its dark surface.
You kicked me out of the apartment, but not the warehouse.
So I figured I might as well make myself useful and take watch. The twisty, bendy, old ways manner of warping orders. She wondered what the old ways had to say about queenly propriety. She grabbed a wooden spoon and pushed the melting butter around a bit. We both have atrocious tempers. You know I didn't mean what I said about the loyalty thing or about the half-human thing. You know none of that matters to me. Gavriel's son. Holy gods. But she would keep her mouth shut about it until Adian felt like broaching the subject.
Aelin, I'm ashamed of what I said to you.
Well, that makes two of us, so let's leave it at that. She whisked the eggs, keeping an eye on the butter. I understand, Adian, I really do, about the blood oath. I knew what it meant to you. I made a mistake not telling you. I don't normally admit to that kind of thing, but I should have told you, and I'm sorry. He sniffed at the onions, his expert slicing leaving a neat heap of them on one end of the cutting board, and then started on the small brown mushrooms.
That oath meant everything to me. Ren and I used to be at each other's throats because of it when we were children. His father hated me because I was the one favored to take it.
She took the onions from him and chucked them into the butter, sizzling, filling the kitchen. There's nothing that says you can't take the oath, you know. Maeve has several blood-sworn members in her court.
who were now making Aelin's life a living hell.
You can take it, and so can Ren. Only if you want to, but I won't be upset if you don't want to.
In Terrasen, there was only one.
She stirred the onions. Things change. New traditions for a new court. You can swear it right now, if you wish.
Adian finished the mushrooms and set down the knife as he leaned against the counter. Not now. Not until I see you crowned. Not until we can be in front of a crowd. In front of the world.
She dumped in the mushrooms. You're even more dramatic than I am.
Adian snorted. Hurry up with the eggs. I'm going to die of starvation.
Make the bacon, or you don't get to eat any.
Adian could hardly move fast enough.
Chapter 30. There was a room deep below the stone castle that the demon lurking inside him liked to visit. The demon prince even let him out sometimes through the eyes that might once have been his. It was a room cloaked in endless night, or maybe the darkness was from the demon. But they could see. They had always been able to see in the blackness. Where the demon prince had come from, so little light existed that it had learned to hunt in the shadows. There were pedestals arranged in the round room in an elegant curve, each topped with a black pillow, and on each pillow sat a crown. Kept down here like trophies, kept in darkness, like him. A secret room. The prince stood in the center of it, surveying the crowns. The demon had taken control of the body completely. He'd let him, after that woman with the familiar eyes had failed to kill him. He waited for the demon to leave the room, but the demon prince spoke instead, a hissing, cold voice that came from between the stars, speaking to him, only to him. The crowns of the conquered nations, the demon prince said. More will be added soon. Perhaps the crowns of other worlds, too. He did not care.
You should care. You will enjoy it as we rip the realms to shreds. He backed away, tried to retreat into a pocket of darkness where even the demon prince couldn't find him. The demon laughed. Spineless human. No wonder she lost her head.
He tried to shut out the voice. Tried to. He wished that woman had killed him. Chapter 31. Manon stormed into Parrington's massive war tent, shoving aside the heavy canvas flap so violently that her iron nails slashed through the material. Why are my 13 being denied access to the Yellowlegs' coven? Explain. Now. As the last word snapped out of her, Manon stopped dead. Standing in the center of the dim tent, the Duke whirled toward her, his face dark and, Manon had to admit with a thrill, a bit terrifying. Get out, he said, his eyes flaring like embers. But Manon's attention was fixed on what, who, stood beyond the Duke. Manon stepped forward, even as the Duke advanced on her. Her black, filmy dress like woven night. Kaltane was facing a kneeling, trembling young soldier, her pale hand outstretched toward his contorted face. And all over her, an unholy aura of dark fire burned.
What is that? Manon said.
Out, the Duke barked, and actually had the nerve to lunge for Manon's arm. She swiped with her iron nails, sidestepping the Duke without so much as glancing at him. All her focus, every pore of her, was pinned on the dark-haired lady. The young soldier, one of Parrington's own, was silently sobbing as tendrils of that black fire floated from Kaltane's fingertips and slithered over his skin, leaving no marks. The human turned pain-filled gray eyes to Manon. Please, he mouthed. The Duke snatched for Manon again, and she darted past him. Explain this.
You do not give orders, wing leader. The Duke snapped. Now get out!
What is that? Manon repeated. The Duke surged for her, but then a silken female voice breathed.
Shadow fire.
Parrington froze, as if surprised she had spoken,
Where does this shadow fire come from?
Manon demanded. The woman was so small, so thin. The dress was barely more than cobwebs and shadows. It was cold in the mountain camp, even for Manon. Had she refused a cloak? Or did they just not care? Or perhaps with this fire? Perhaps she did not need one at all.
From me,
Caltaine said, in a voice that was dead and hollow and yet vicious.
It has always been there, asleep, and now it has been awoken, shaped anew.
What does it do? Manon said. The Duke had stopped to observe the young woman, like he was figuring out some sort of puzzle, like he was waiting for something else. Caltaine smiled faintly at the soldier shaking on the ornate red carpet, his golden brown hair shimmering in the light of the dimmed lantern above him.
It does this,
she whispered, and curled her delicate fingers. The shadow fire shot from her hand and wrapped around the soldier like a second skin. He opened his mouth in a silent scream, convulsing and thrashing, tipping his head back to the ceiling of the tent, and sobbing in quiet, unheard agony. But no burns marred his skin, as if the shadow fire summoned only pain, as if it tricked the body into thinking it was being incinerated. Manon didn't take her eyes away from the man spasming on the carpet, tears of blood now leaking from his eyes, his nose, his ears. Quietly, she asked the Duke, "Why are you torturing him? Is he a rebel spy?" Now the Duke approached Caltaine, peering at her blank, beautiful face. Her eyes were wholly fixed on the young man, enthralled. She spoke again.
"No, just a simple man."
No inflection, no sign of empathy.
"Enough,"
the Duke said, and the fire vanished from Caltaine's hand. The young man sagged on the carpet, panting and weeping. The Duke pointed to the curtains in the back of the tent, which no doubt concealed a sleeping area.
"Lie down."
Like a doll, like a ghost, Caltaine turned, that midnight gown swirling with her, and stalked toward the heavy red curtains, slipping through them as if she were no more than mist. The Duke walked over to the young man and knelt before him on the ground. The captive lifted his head, blood and tears mingling on his face. But the Duke's eyes met Manon's as he put his massive hands on either side of his soldier's face and snapped his neck. The death crunch shuddered through Manon like the twanging of a harp. Normally, she would have chuckled. But for a heartbeat, she felt warm, sticky blue blood on her hands, felt the hilt of her knife imprinted against her palm as she gripped it hard and slashed it across the throat of that Kraken. The soldier slumped to the carpet as the Duke rose.
"What is it that you want, Blackbeak?"
Like the Kraken's death, this had been a warning. Keep her mouth shut. But she planned to write to her grandmother, planned to tell her everything that had happened. This, and that the Yellowlegs coven hadn't been seen or heard from since entering the chamber beneath the keep. The matron would fly down here and start shredding spines. "I want to know why we have been blocked from the Yellowlegs coven. They are under my jurisdiction, and as such, I have the right to see them."
"It was successful. That's all you need to know."
"You're to tell your guards immediately to grant me and mine permission to enter." Indeed, dozens of guards had blocked her path, and short of killing her way through, Manon had no way in.
"You choose to ignore my orders. Why should I follow yours, wing leader?"
"You won't have a goddamned army to ride those wyverns if you lock them all up for your breeding experiments." They were warriors. They were iron teeth witches. They weren't chattel to be bred. They weren't to be experimented upon. Her grandmother would slaughter him. The Duke merely shrugged.
"I told you I wanted Blackbeaks. You refused to give them to me."
"Is this punishment?" The words snapped out of her. The Yellowlegs were still Iron Teeth, after all, still under her command.
"Oh no, not at all. But if you disobey my orders again, the next time it might be."
He cocked his head, and the light gilded his dark eyes.
"There are princes, you know, among the Volg. Powerful, cunning princes, capable of splattering people on walls. They've been very keen to test themselves against your kind. Perhaps they'll pay a visit to your barracks. See who survives the night. It'd be a good way to weed out the lesser witches. I have no use for weak soldiers in my armies, even if it decreases your numbers.
For a moment, there was a roaring silence in her head. A threat. A threat from this human. This man who had lived but a fraction of her existence. This mortal beast.
Careful, a voice said in her head. Proceed with cunning.
So Manon allowed herself to nod slightly in acquiescence and asked,
And what of your other activities? What goes on beneath the mountains circling this valley?
The Duke studied her, and she met his gaze, met every inch of blackness within it, and found something slithering inside that had no place in this world. At last, he said,
You do not wish to learn what is being bred and forged under those mountains, Blackbeak. Don't bother sending your scouts in. They won't see daylight again. Consider yourself warned.
The human worm clearly didn't know precisely how skilled her shadows were, but she wasn't about to correct him, not when it could be used to her advantage one day. Yet whatever did go on inside those mountains wasn't her concern. Not with the yellow legs and the rest of the Legion to deal with. Manon jerked her chin toward the dead soldier. What do you plan to use this shadow fire for? Torture? A flash of ire at yet another question. The Duke said tightly,
I have not yet decided. For now she will experiment like this. Perhaps later she will learn to incinerate the armies of our enemies.
A flame that did not leave burns. Loosed upon thousands.
It would be glorious, even if it was grotesque.
And are there armies of enemies gathering? Will you use this shadow fire on them?
The Duke again cocked his head, the scars on his face thrown into stark contrast in the dim lantern light.
Your grandmother didn't tell you then.
About what? She bit out. The Duke strode toward the curtained-off part of the room.
About the weapons she has been making for me. For you.
What weapons? She didn't bother wasting time with tactical silence. The Duke just grinned at her as he disappeared, the curtains swinging enough to reveal Caltaine lying on a low bed covered in furs, her thin, pale arms at her sides, her eyes open and unseeing. A shell. A weapon. Two weapons. Caltaine, and whatever her grandmother was making. That was why the matron had stayed in the Fangs with the other High Witches. If the three of them were combining their knowledge, wisdom, and cruelty to develop a weapon to use against the mortal armies. A shiver skidded down Manon's spine, as she glanced once more at the broken human on the rug. Whatever this new weapon was, whatever the three High Witches came up with, the humans wouldn't stand a chance.
I want you all spreading the word to the other covens. I want sentinels on constant surveillance at the entrances to the barracks. 3-hour watch rotations, no longer. We don't need anyone passing out and letting the enemy slip in. I've dispatched a letter to the matron already.
Elite awoke with a jolt inside the airy, warm and rested and not daring to breathe. It was still dark, but the moonlight was gone. Dawn far off, and in the blackness, she could faintly make out the gleam of snow-white hair and the flicker of a few sets of iron teeth and nails. Oh, gods. She planned to sleep for only an hour. She must have slept for at least 4. Abraxos didn't move behind her, his wings still shielding her. Since that encounter with Astarin and Manon, every hour, waking or sleeping, had been a nightmare for Elide. And even days afterward, she caught herself holding her breath at odd moments. When the shadow of the fear gripped her by the throat. The witches hadn't bothered with her, even though she'd claimed her blood ran blue, but neither had Vernon. But tonight, she'd been limping back to her room, the stairwell dark and quiet. Too quiet, even with the scraping of her chains on the floor. And by her door, a pocket of utter silence, as if even the dust mites had held their breath. Someone was inside her room, waiting for her. So she'd kept walking, all the way to the moonlit airy, where her uncle wouldn't dare go. The wyverns of the 13 had been curled up on the floor like cats or perched on their posts over the drop.
to her left, Abraxos had watched her from where he'd sprawled on his belly, his depthless eyes wide, unblinking. When she'd come close enough to smell the carrion on his breath, she'd said,
"I need somewhere to sleep, just for tonight."
His tail moved slightly, the iron spikes clinking on the stones, wagging, like a dog, sleepy but pleased to see her. There was no growl to be heard, no glint of iron teeth readying to gulp her down in two bites. She would rather be gobbled down than face whoever had been in her room. Alid had slid down against the wall, tucking her hands under her armpits and curling her knees to her chest. Her teeth began clacking against each other, and she curled tighter. It was so cold in here that her breath clouded in front of her. Hay crunched, and Abraxos sidled closer. Alid had tensed, might have sprung to her feet and bolted. The wyvern had extended one wing toward her as if an invitation to sit beside him.
"Please don't eat me,"
she'd whispered. He'd huffed, as if to say, "You wouldn't be much of a mouthful." Shivering, Alid rose. He seemed bigger with every step, but that wing remained extended, as if she were the animal in need of calming. As she reached his side, she could hardly breathe as she extended a hand and stroked the curving, scaly hide. It was surprisingly soft, like worn leather, and toasty, as if he were a furnace. Carefully, aware of the head he angled to watch her every move, she sat down against him, her back instantly warmed. That wing had gracefully lowered, folding down until it became a wall of warm membrane between her and the chill wind. She leaned farther into his softness and delightful heat, letting it sink into her bones. She hadn't even realized that she'd tumbled into sleep, and now, they were here. Abraxos's reek must be concealing her own human scent, or else the wing leader would have found her by now. Abraxos kept still enough that she wondered if he knew that too. The voices moved toward the center of the airy, and Alid gauged the distance between Abraxos and the door. Perhaps she could slip away before they noticed. "Keep it quiet, keep it secret. If anyone reveals our defenses, they die at my hand."
"As you will it," Sorrel said.
Asterin said,
"Do we tell the Yellowlegs and Blue Bloods?"
"No,"
Manon said, her voice like death and bloodshed. "Blackbeaks only."
"Even if another coven winds up volunteering for the next round?" Asterin said.
Manon gave a snarl that made the hair on Alid's neck rise. "We can only tug so much at the leash."
"Leashes can snap," Asterin challenged.
"So can your neck,"
Manon said.
Now,
while they were fighting, Abraxos remained unmoving, as if not daring to draw attention to himself while Alid prepared to hurry out. But the chains. Alid sat back down and carefully, slowly, lifted her foot just a little off the floor, holding the chains so they wouldn't drag. With one foot and one hand, she began pushing herself across the stones, sliding for the door.
"This shadow fire,"
Sorrel mused, as if trying to defuse the brewing storm between the wing leader and her cousin.
"Will he use it on us?"
"He seemed inclined to think it could be used on entire armies. I wouldn't put it past him to hold it over our heads."
Closer and closer,
Alid edged for the open doorway. She was almost there when Manon crooned, "If you had any backbone, Alid, you would have stayed beside Abraxos until we left." Chapter 32. Manon had spotted Alid sleeping against Abraxos the moment they'd entered the airy, and she'd become aware of her presence moments before that, tracking her from scent alone up the stairs. If Asterin and Sorrel had noticed, they made no comment. The servant girl was sitting on her ass, almost to the doorway, one foot in the air to keep her chains from dragging. Smart, even if she'd been too stupid to realize how well they saw in the dark.
"There was someone in my room," Alid said,
lowering her foot and standing. Asterin stiffened.
"Who?" "I don't know,"
Alid said, keeping near the doorway, even if it would do her no good.
"It didn't seem wise to go inside."
Abraxos had tensed, his tail shifting over the stones. The useless beast was worried for the girl. Manon narrowed her eyes at him.
Isn't your kind supposed to eat young women?
He glared at her. Elide held her ground as Manon prowled closer. And Manon, despite herself, was impressed. She looked at the girl. Really looked at her. A girl who was not afraid to sleep against a wyvern. Who had enough common sense to tell when danger might be approaching. Perhaps that blood really did run blue.
There is a chamber beneath this castle, Manon said, and Asterin and Sorrel fell into rank behind her. Inside it is a coven of Yellowlegs witches, all taken by the Duke to create demon offspring. I want you to get into that chamber. I want you to tell me what's happening in there.
The human went pale as death.
I can't.
You can and you will, Manon said. You're mine now. She felt Asterin's attention on her. The disapproval and surprise. Manon went on.
You find a way into that chamber. You give me the details. You keep quiet about what you learn and you live. If you betray me, if you tell anyone, then we'll toast to you at your wedding party to a handsome Volg husband, I suppose.
The girl's hands were shaking. Manon smacked them down to her sides.
We do not tolerate cowards in the Blackbeak ranks, she hissed. Or did you think your protection was free?
Manon pointed to the door.
You're to stay in my chambers if your own are compromised.
Go wait at the bottom of the stairs.
Elide glanced behind Manon to her second and third, as if she was considering begging them to help. But Manon knew that their faces were stony and unyielding. Elide's terror was a tang in Manon's nose as she limped away. It took her far too long to get down the stairs, that wasted leg of hers slowing her to a crone's pace. Once she was at the bottom, Manon turned to Sorrel and Asterin.
She could go to the Duke,
Sorrel said. As second, she had the right to make that remark, to think through all threats to the heir.
She's not that ruthless.
Asterin clicked her tongue.
That was why you spoke, knowing she was here.
Manon didn't bother nodding.
If she's caught? Asterin asked.
Sorrel glanced sharply at her. Manon didn't feel like reprimanding. It was on Sorrel to sort out the dominance between them now.
If she's caught, then we'll find another way.
And you have no qualms about them killing her? Or using that shadow fire on her?
Stand down, Asterin,
Sorrel ground out. Asterin did no such thing.
You should be asking these questions second.
Sorrel's iron teeth snapped down.
It is because of your questioning that you're now third.
Enough, Manon said. Elide is the only one who might get into that chamber and report. The Duke has his grunts under orders not to let a single witch near. Even the shadows can't get close enough. But a servant girl, cleaning up whatever mess.
You were the one waiting in her room, Asterin said.
A dose of fear goes a long way in humans.
Is she human, though?
Sorrel asked.
Or do we count her among us?
It makes no difference if she's human or witch kind. I'd send whoever was the most qualified down into those chambers, and at this moment only Elide can gain access to them.
Cunning. That was how she would get around the Duke, with his schemes and his weapons.
She might work for his king, but she would not tolerate being left ignorant. I need to know what's happening in those chambers, Manon said. If we lose one life to do that, then so be it.
And what then?
Asterin asked, despite Sorrel's warning.
Once you learn, what then?
Manon hadn't decided. Again, that phantom blood coated her hands. Follow orders, or else she and the 13 would be executed, either by her grandmother or by the Duke. After her grandmother read her letter, maybe it would be different. But until then... Then we continue as we've been commanded, Manon said. But I will not be led into this with a blindfold over my eyes.
Spy. A spy for the Wingleader.
Elide supposed it was no different than being a spy for herself, for her own freedom. But learning about the supply wagon's arrival and trying to get into that chamber, while also going about her duties, maybe she would get lucky. Maybe she could do both. Manon had a pallet of hay brought up to her room, setting it near the fire to warm Elide's mortal bones, she'd said. Elide hardly slept that first night in the witch's tower. When she stood to use the privy, convinced that the witch was asleep, she'd made it two steps before Manon had said, "Going somewhere."
Gods, her voice, like a snake hidden up a tree.
She'd stammered out an explanation about needing the bathing room. When Manon hadn't replied, Elide had stumbled out. She'd returned to find the witch asleep, or at least her eyes were closed. Manon slept naked, even with the chill. Her white hair cascaded down her back, and there wasn't a part of the witch that didn't seem lean with muscle or flecked with faint scarring. No part that wasn't a reminder of what Manon would do to her if she failed. 3 days later, Elide made her move. The exhaustion that had tugged relentlessly on her vanished, as she clutched the armful of linens she'd taken from the laundry and peered down the hallway. 4 guards stood at the door to the stairwell. It had taken her 3 days of helping in the laundry, 3 days of chatting up the laundresses, to learn if linens were ever needed in the chamber at the bottom of those stairs. No one wanted to talk to her the first 2 days. They just eyed her and told her where to haul things or when to singe her hands or what to scrub until her back hurt. But yesterday she had seen the torn, blood-soaked clothes come in. Blue blood, not red. Witch blood. Elide kept her head down, working on the soldiers' shirts she'd been given once she'd proved her skill with a needle, but she noted which laundresses intercepted the clothes, and then she kept working through the hours it took to clean and dry and press them, staying later than most of the others, waiting. She was nobody and nothing and belonged to no one, but if she let Manon and the Blackbeaks think she accepted their claim on her, she might very well still get free once those wagons arrived. The Blackbeaks didn't care about her, not really. Her heritage was convenient for them. She doubted they would notice when she vanished. She'd been a ghost for years now, anyway, her heart full of the forgotten dead. So she worked and waited. Even when her back was aching, even when her hands were so sore they shook, she marked the laundress who hauled the pressed clothes out of the chamber and vanished. Elide memorized every detail of her face, of her build and height. No one noticed when she slipped out after her, carrying an armful of linens for the wing leader. No one stopped her as she trailed the laundress down hall after hall until she reached this spot. Elide peered down the hall again, just as the laundress came up out of the stairwell, arms empty, face drawn and bloodless. The guards didn't stop her. Good. The laundress turned down another hall, and Elide loosed the breath she'd been holding. Turning toward Manon's tower, she silently thought through her plan over and over. If she was caught, perhaps she should throw herself from one of the balconies rather than face one of the dozens of awful deaths awaiting her. No, she would endure. She had survived when so many, nearly everyone she'd loved, had not, when her kingdom had not. So she would survive for them, and when she left, she would build herself a new life far away in their honor. Elide hobbled up a winding stairwell. Gods, she hated stairs. She was about halfway up when she heard a man's voice that stopped her cold.
The Duke said you spoke. Why will you not say a word to me?
Vernon. Silence greeted him. Back down the stairs. She should go right back down the stairs.
So beautiful,
her uncle murmured to whomever it was.
Like a moonless night.
Elide's mouth went dry at the tone in his voice.
Perhaps it's fate that we ran into each other here. He watches you so closely.
Vernon paused.
Together,
he said quietly, reverently.
Together, we shall create wonders that will make the world tremble.
Such dark, intimate words, filled with such entitlement. She didn't want to know what he meant. Elide took as silent a step as she could down the stairs. She had to get away.
Caltaine.
her uncle rumbled. A demand and a threat and a promise. The silent young woman, the one who never spoke, who never looked at anything, who had such marks on her. Alid had seen her only a few times, had seen how little she responded or fought back. And then Alid was walking up the stairs. Up and up, making sure her chains clanked as loudly as possible, her uncle fell silent. She rounded the next landing, and there they were. Kaltane had been shoved up against the wall, the neck of that too flimsy gown tugged to the side, her breast nearly out. There was such emptiness on her face, as if she weren't even there at all. Vernon stood a few paces away. Alid clutched her linens so hard she thought she'd shred them. Wished she had those iron nails for once.
Lady Kaltane,
she said to the young woman, barely a few years older than she. She did not expect her own rage, did not expect herself to go on to say,
I was sent to find you, lady. This way, please.
Who sent for her?
Vernon demanded. Alid met his gaze and did not bow her head, not an inch.
The wingleader.
The wingleader isn't authorized to meet with her.
And you are?
Alid set herself between them, though it would do no good should her uncle decide to use force. Vernon smiled.
I was wondering when you'd show your fangs, Alid.
Or should I say, your iron teeth?
He knew then.
Alid stared him down and put a light hand on Kaltane's arm. She was as cold as ice. She didn't even look at Alid.
If you'd be so kind, lady,
Alid said, tugging on that arm, clutching the laundry with her other hand. Kaltane mutely started into a walk. Vernon chuckled.
You two could be sisters,
he said casually.
Fascinating,
Alid said, guiding the lady up the steps, even as the effort to keep her balanced made her leg throb in agony.
Until next time,
her uncle said from behind them, and she didn't want to know who he meant. In silence, her heart pounding so wildly that she thought she might vomit, Alid led Kaltane up to the next landing and let go of her long enough to open the door and guide her into the hall. The lady paused, staring at the stone, at nothing.
Where do you need to go?
Alid asked her softly. The lady just stared. In the torchlight, the scar on her arm was gruesome.
Who had done that?
Alid put a hand on the woman's elbow again.
Where can I take you that is safe?
Nowhere. There was nowhere here that was safe. But slowly, as if it took her a lifetime to remember how to do it, the lady slid her eyes to Alid. Darkness and death and black flame, despair and rage and emptiness. And yet, a kernel of understanding. Kaltane merely walked away, that dress hissing on the stones. There were bruises that looked like fingerprints around her other arm, as if someone had gripped her too hard. This place. These people. Alid fought her nausea, watching until the woman vanished around a corner. Manon was seated at her desk, staring at what appeared to be a letter, when Alid entered the tower.
Did you get into the chamber?
The witch said, not bothering to turn around. Alid swallowed hard.
I need you to get me some poison.
Chapter 33. Standing in a wide clearing among the stacks of crates, Adian blinked against the late morning sun slanting through the windows high up in the warehouse. He was already sweating, and in dire need of water as the heat of the day turned the warehouse suffocating. He didn't complain. He'd demanded to be allowed to help, and Aelin had refused. He'd insisted he was fit to fight, and she had merely said, prove it. So here they were. He and the Fey Prince had been going through a workout routine with sparring sticks for the past 30 minutes, and it was thoroughly kicking his ass. The wound on his side was one wrong move away from splitting, but he gritted through it. The pain was welcome, considering the thoughts that had kept him up all night, that Roe and Evelyn had never told him, that his mother had died to conceal the knowledge of who sired him, that he was half-fey, and that he might not know for another decade how he would age, if he would outlast his queen. And his father, Gavriel, that was a whole other path to be explored. Later. Perhaps it'd be useful if Maeve made good on the threat she posed, now that one of his father's legendary companions was hunting Aelin in this city. Lorkin. Shit. The stories he'd heard about Lorkin had been full of glory and gore, mostly the latter. A male who didn't make mistakes, and who was ruthless with those who did. Dealing with the King of Otterlin was bad enough, but having an immortal enemy at their backs? Shit. And if Maeve ever saw fit to send Gavriel over here, Adian would find a way to endure it, as he'd found a way to endure everything in his life. Adian was finishing a maneuver with the stick that the prince had shown him twice now, when Aelin paused her own exercising. I think that's enough for today, she said, barely winded. Adian stiffened at the dismissal already in her eyes. He'd been waiting all morning for this. For the past 10 years, he had learned everything he could from mortals. If warriors came to his territory, he'd use his considerable charms to convince them to teach him what they knew. And whenever he'd ventured outside of his lands, he'd made a point to glean as much as he could about fighting and killing from whoever lived there. So pitting himself against a purebred fey warrior, direct from Dorinel, was an opportunity he couldn't waste. He wouldn't let his cousin's pity wreck it. I heard a story, Adian drawled to Rowan, that you killed an enemy warlord using a table. Please, Aelin said. Who the hell told you that? Quinn, your uncle's captain of the guard. He was an admirer of Prince Rowan's. He knew all the stories. Aelin slid her eyes to Rowan, who smirked, bracing his sparring stick on the floor. You can't be serious, she said. What, you squashed him to death like a pressed grape? Rowan choked. No, I didn't squash him like a grape. He gave the queen a feral smile. I ripped the leg off the table and impaled him with it. Clean through the chest and into the stone wall, Adian said. Well, said Aelin, snorting, I'll give you points for resourcefulness, at least. Adian rolled his neck. Let's get back to it. But Aelin gave Rowan a look that pretty much said, Don't kill my cousin, please. Call it off. Adian gripped the wooden sparring stick tighter. I'm fine. A week ago, Aelin said, you had one foot in the afterworld. Your wound is still healing. We're done for today, and you're not coming out. I know my limits, and I say I'm fine. Rowan's slow grin was nothing short of lethal. An invitation to dance. And that primal part of Adian decided it didn't want to flee from the predator in Rowan's eyes. No, it very much wanted to stand its ground and roar back. Aelin groaned, but kept her distance. Prove it, she'd said. Well, he would. Adian gave no warning as he attacked, feinting right and aiming low. He'd killed men with that move, sliced them clean in half. But Rowan dodged him with brutal efficiency, deflecting and positioning to the offensive. And that was all that Adian managed to see before he brought up his stick on pure instinct. Bracing himself against the force of Rowan's blow had his side bleeding in pain, but he kept focused, even though Rowan had almost knocked the stick from his hands. He managed to strike the next blow himself, but as Rowan's lips tugged upward, Adian had the feeling that the prince was toying with him. Not for amusement. No, to prove some point. Red mist coated his vision. Rowan went to sweep his legs out, and Adian stomped hard enough on Rowan's stick that it snapped in two. As it did, Adian twisted, lunging to bring his own stick straight into Rowan's face. Gripping the two pieces in either hand, the Fey warrior dodged, going low, and Adian didn't see the second blow coming to his legs. Then he was blinking at the wooden beams of the ceiling, gasping for breath, as the pain from his wound arced through his side. Rowan snarled down at him. One piece of the stick angled to cut his throat, while the other pushed against his abdomen, ready to spill his guts. Holy burning hell. Adian had known he'd be fast and strong.
But this?
Having Rowan fight alongside the Bane might very well decide battles in any sort of war.
Gods.
His side hurt badly enough he thought he might be bleeding. The Fey Prince spoke so quietly that even Aelin couldn't hear.
Your queen gave you an order to stop, for your own good, because she needs you healthy, and because it pains her to see you injured. Do not ignore her command next time.
Adian was wise enough not to snap a retort, nor to move as the prince dug in the tips of his sticks a little harder.
And,
Rowan added,
if you ever speak to her again the way you did last night, I'll rip out your tongue and shove it down your throat. Understand?
With the stick at his neck, Adian couldn't nod without impaling himself on the jagged end, but he breathed.
Understood, Prince.
Adian opened his mouth again as Rowan backed away, about to say something he would surely regret, when a bright hello sounded. They all whirled, weapons up, as Lysandra closed the rolling door behind her, boxes and bags in her arms. She had an uncanny way of sneaking into places unnoticed. Lysandra took two steps, that stunning face grave, and stopped dead as she beheld Rowan. Then his queen was suddenly moving, snatching some of the bags from Lysandra's arms and steering her into the apartment a level above. Adian eased from where he'd been sprawled on the ground.
Is that Lysandra?
Rowan asked.
Not too bad on the eyes, is she?
Rowan snorted.
Why is she here?
Adian gingerly prodded the wound in his side, making sure it was indeed intact.
She probably has information about Aerobin.
Whom Adian would soon begin hunting, once his god's damned wound was finally healed, regardless of whether Aelin deemed him fit. And then he'd cut the king of the assassins into little tiny pieces over many, many days.
Yet she doesn't want you to hear it.
Adian said,
I think she finds everyone but Aelin boring. Biggest disappointment of my life.
A lie, and he didn't know why he said it. But Rowan smiled a bit.
I'm glad she found a female friend.
Adian marveled for a heartbeat at the softness in the warrior's face, until Rowan shifted his eyes toward him and they were full of ice.
Aelin's court will be a new one, different from any other in the world, where the old ways are honored again. You're going to learn them, and I'm going to teach you.
I know the old ways.
You're going to learn them again.
Adian's shoulders pushed back as he rose to his full height.
I'm the general of the Bane and a prince of both Ash River and Galathinius houses. I'm not some untrained foot soldier.
Rowan gave a sharp nod of agreement, and Adian supposed he should be flattered, until Rowan said,
My cadre, as Aelin likes to call them, was a lethal unit because we stuck together and abided by the same code. Maeve might be a sadist, but she ensured that we all understood and followed it. Aelin would never force us into anything. And our code will be different, better than Maeve's. You and I are going to form the backbone of this court. We will shape and decide our own code.
What? Obedience and blind loyalty? He didn't feel like getting a lecture. Even if Rowan was right, and every word out of the prince's mouth was one that Adian had dreamed of hearing for a decade. He should have been the one to initiate this conversation.
Gods above,
he'd had this conversation with Ren weeks ago. Rowan's eyes glittered.
To protect and serve.
Aelin? He could do that. He had already planned on doing that.
Aelin. And each other. And Terrasen.
No room for argument. No hint of doubt. A small part of Adian understood why his cousin had offered the prince the blood oath.
Who is that?
Lysandra said too innocently, as Aelin escorted her up the stairs. Rowan, Aelin said, kicking open the apartment door.
He's spectacularly built, she mused. I've never been with a fey male, or female, for that matter.
Aelin shook her head to try to clear the image from her mind. She swallowed. Lysandra was grinning, and Aelin hissed, setting down the bags on the great room floor and shutting the door. Stop that. Hmm, was all Lysandra said, dropping her boxes and bags beside Aelin's.
Well, I have two things. One, Nezrin sent me a note this morning saying that you had a new, very muscled guest staying and to bring some clothes. So I brought clothes. Looking at our guest, I think Nezrin undersold him a good deal, so the clothes might be tight. Not that I'm objecting to that one bit, but he can use them until you get others.
Thank you, she said, and Lysandra waved a slender hand. She'd thank Philique later.
The other thing I brought you is news. Aerobin received a report last night that two prison wagons were spotted heading south to Morath, chock full of all those missing people.
She wondered if Kaol knew, and if he had tried to stop it. Does he know that former magic wielders are being targeted? A nod.
He's been tracking which people disappear and which get sent south in the prison wagons. He's looking into all his clients' lineages now, no matter how the families tried to conceal their histories after magic was banned, to see if he can use anything to his advantage. It's something to consider when dealing with him, given your talents.
Aelin chewed on her lip.
Thank you for telling me that, too.
Fantastic. Aerobin, Lorkin, the King, the Volg, the Key, Dorian. She had half a mind to stuff her face with every remaining morsel of food in the kitchen.
Just prepare yourself.
Lysandra glanced at a small pocket watch.
I need to go. I have a lunch appointment.
No doubt why Evangeline wasn't with her. She was almost to the door when Aelin said,
How much longer?
Until you're free of your debts.
I still have a great deal to pay off, so a while.
Lysandra paced a few steps and then caught herself.
Clarice keeps adding money as Evangeline grows, claiming that someone so beautiful would have made her double, triple what she originally told me.
That's despicable.
What can I do?
Lysandra held up her wrist, where the tattoo had been inked.
She'll hunt me until the day I die, and I can't run with Evangeline.
I could dig Clarice a grave no one would ever discover, Aelin said, and meant it. Lysandra knew she meant it, too.
Not yet. Not now.
You say the word, and it's done. Lysandra's smile was a thing of savage, dark beauty. Standing before a crate in the cavernous warehouse, Kaol studied the map Aelin had just handed him. He focused on the blank spots, trying not to stare at the warrior prince on guard by the door. It was hard to avoid doing so when Rowan's presence somehow sucked out all the air in the warehouse. Then there was the matter of the delicately pointed ears peeking out from the short silver hair.
Fae.
He'd never seen one other than Aelin in those brief, petrifying moments.
And Rowan.
Conveniently, in all her storytelling, Aelin had forgotten to mention that the prince was so handsome. A handsome fae prince, whom she'd spent months living and training with. While Kaol's own life fell apart. While people died because of her actions. Rowan was watching Kaol as if he might be dinner. Depending on his fae form, that might not be too far wrong. Every instinct was screaming at him to run, despite the fact that Rowan had been nothing but polite. Distant and intense, but polite.
Still,
Kaol didn't need to see the prince in action to know that he would be dead before he could even draw his sword.
You know he won't bite, Aelin crooned.
Kaol leveled a stare at her.
Can you just explain what these maps are for?
Anything you, Res or Brello, can fill in regarding these gaps in the castle defenses would be appreciated, she said.
Not an answer. There was no sign of Adian among the stacked crates, but the general was probably listening from somewhere nearby with his keen fey hearing.
For you to bring down the clock tower?
Kaol asked, folding up the map and tucking it into the inner pocket of his tunic.
Maybe,
she said. He tried not to bristle, but there was something settled about her now, as if some invisible tension in her face had vanished. He tried not to look toward the door again.
I haven't heard from Res or Brello for a few days,
he said instead.
I'll make contact soon.
She nodded, pulling out a second map, this one of the labyrinthian network of the sewers, and weighted down the ends with whatever small blades she had on her. A good number of them, apparently.
Aerobin learned that the missing prisoners were taken to Morath last night.
Did you know? Another failure that fell on his shoulders. Another disaster.
No.
They can't have gotten far. You could gather a team and ambush the wagons.
I know I could.
Are you going to?
He laid a hand on the map.
Did you bring me here to prove a point about my uselessness?
She straightened.
I asked you to come because I thought it would be helpful for the both of us. We're both under a fair amount of pressure these days.
Her turquoise and gold eyes were calm, unfazed. Kaol said,
When do you make your move?
Soon.
Again, not an answer. He said as evenly as he could.
Anything else I should know?
I'd start avoiding the sewers.
It's your death warrant if you don't.
There are people trapped down there.
We found the nests, but no sign of the prisoners. I won't abandon them.
That's all well and good, she said, and he clenched his teeth at the dismissal in her tone. But there are worse things than Volg grunts patrolling the sewers, and I bet they won't turn a blind eye to anyone in their territory. I would weigh the risks if I were you. She dragged a hand through her hair. So, are you going to ambush the prison wagons?
Of course I am.
Even though the rebels' numbers were down. So many of their people were either fleeing the city altogether, or refusing to risk their necks in an increasingly futile battle.
Was that concern flickering in her eyes?
But she said, They use warded locks on the wagons, and the doors are reinforced with iron. Bring the right tools. He drew in a breath to snap at her about talking down to him, but she would know about the wagons. She'd spent weeks in one.
He couldn't quite meet her stare as he straightened up to go. Tell Falik that Prince Rowan says thank you for the clothes, Aelin said. What the hell was she talking about? Perhaps it was another jab.
So he made for the door, where Rowan stepped aside with a murmured farewell.
Nezrin had told him she'd spent the evening with Adian and Aelin, but he hadn't realized they might be friends. He hadn't considered that Nezrin might wind up unable to resist the allure of Aelin Galathinius. Though he supposed that Aelin was a queen, she did not falter. She did not do anything but plow ahead, burning bright. Even if it meant killing Dorian. They hadn't spoken of it since the day of Adian's rescue. But it still hung between them, and when she went to free magic, Kaol would again have the proper precautions in place. Because he did not think she would put her sword down the next time.
Chapter 34 Aelin knew she had things to do, vital things, terrible things, but she could sacrifice one day. Keeping to the shadows whenever possible, she spent the afternoon showing Rowan the city, from the elegant residential districts to the markets crammed with vendors selling goods for the summer solstice in 2 weeks. There was no sign or scent of Lorcan, thank the gods, but the king's men were posted at a few busy intersections, giving Aelin an opportunity to point them out to Rowan. He studied them with trained efficiency, his keen sense of smell enabling him to pick out which ones were still human and which were inhabited by lesser Volg demons. From the look on his face, she honestly felt a little bad for any guard that came across him, demon or human. A little, but not much, especially given that their presence alone somewhat ruined her plans for a peaceful, quiet day. She wanted to show Rowan the good parts of the city before dragging him into its underbelly. So she took him to one of Nezrin's family bakeries, where she went so far as to buy a few of those pear tarts. At the docks, Rowan even convinced her to try some pan-fried trout. She'd once sworn never to eat fish, and had cringed as the fork had neared her mouth. But the damned thing was delicious. She ate her entire fish, then snuck bites of Rowan's, to his snarling dismay. Here, Rowan was here with her in Rifthold. And there was so much more she wanted him to see, to learn about what her life had been like. She'd never wanted to share any of it before. Even when she'd heard the crack of a whip after lunch, as they cooled themselves by the water, she'd wanted him with her to witness it,
He'd silently stood with a hand on her shoulder as they watched the cluster of chained slaves hauling cargo onto one of the ships. Watched, and could do nothing. Soon, she promised herself. Putting an end to that was a high priority. They meandered back through the market stalls, one after another, until the smell of roses and lilies wafted by, the river breeze sweeping petals of every shape and color past their feet, as the flower girls shouted about their wares. She turned to him. If you were a gentleman, you'd buy me— Rowan's face had gone blank, his eyes hollow as he stared at one of the flower girls in the center of the square, a basket of hothouse peonies on her thin arm. Young, pretty, dark-haired, and— oh, gods. She shouldn't have brought him here. Lyria had sold flowers in the market. She'd been a poor flower girl before Rowan had spotted her, and instantly known she was his mate. A fairy tale. Until she'd been slaughtered by enemy forces. Pregnant with Rowan's child. Aelin clenched and unclenched her fingers. Any words lodged in her throat. Rowan was still staring at the girl, who smiled at a passing woman, aglow with some inner light.
I didn't deserve her, Rowan said quietly.
Aelin swallowed hard. There were wounds in both of them that had yet to heal. But this one, truth. As always, she could offer him one truth in exchange for another. I didn't deserve Sam. He looked at her at last. She'd do anything to get rid of the agony in his eyes. Anything. His gloved fingers brushed her own, then dropped back to his side. She clenched her hand into a fist again. Come, I want to show you something. Aelin scrounged up some dessert from the street vendors while Rowan waited in a shadowed alley. Now, sitting on one of the wooden rafters in the gilded dome of the darkened royal theater, Aelin munched on a lemon cookie and swung her legs in the open air below. The space was the same as she remembered it, but the silence, the darkness. This used to be my favorite place in the entire world, she said, her words too loud in the emptiness. Sunlight poured in from the roof door they'd broken into, illuminating the rafters and the golden dome, gleaming faintly off the polished brass banisters and the blood-red curtains of the stage below. Arobin owns a private box, so I went any chance I could. The nights I didn't feel like dressing up or being seen, or maybe the nights I had a job and only an hour free, I'd creep in here through that door and listen. Rowan finished his cookie and gazed at the dark space below. He'd been so quiet for the past 30 minutes, as if he'd pulled back into a place where she couldn't reach him. She nearly sighed with relief as he said,
I've never seen an orchestra, or a theater like this, crafted around sound and luxury. Even in Doranel, the theaters and amphitheaters are ancient, with benches or just steps.
There's no place like this anywhere, perhaps, even in Terrasen.
Then you'll have to build one.
With what money? You think people are going to be happy to starve while I build a theater for my own pleasure?
Perhaps not right away, but if you believe one would benefit the city, the country, then do it. Artists are essential.
Florine had said as much. Aelin sighed. This place has been shut down for months, and yet I swear I can still hear the music floating in the air.
Rowan angled his head, studying the dark with those immortal senses. Perhaps the music does live on, in some form.
The thought made her eyes sting. I wish you could have heard it. I wish you had been there to hear Pitor conduct the Stygian Suite. Sometimes I feel like I'm still sitting down in that box, 13 years old, and weeping from the sheer glory of it.
You cried.
She could almost see the memories of their training this spring flash in his eyes. All those times music had calmed or unleashed her magic. It was a part of her soul, as much as he was. The final movement? Every damn time. I would go back to the keep and have the music in my mind for days, even as I trained or killed or slept. It was a kind of madness, loving that music. It was why I started playing the pianoforte, so I could come home at night and make my poor attempt at replicating it. She'd never told anyone that. Never taken anyone here, either. Rowan said,
Is there a pianoforte in here?
I haven't played in months and months, and this is a horrible idea for about a dozen different reasons, she said for the 10th time, as she finished rolling back the curtains on the stage. She'd stood here before, when Arabin's patronage had earned them invitations to galas, held on the stage for the sheer thrill of walking on sacred space. But now, amid the gloom of the dead theater, lit with a single candle Rowan had found, it felt like standing in a tomb. The chairs of the orchestra were still arranged as they probably had been the night the musicians had walked out to protest the massacres in Endovir and Calicalla. They were all still unaccounted for, and considering the array of miseries the king now heaped upon the world, death would have been the kindest option. Clenching her jaw, Aelin leashed the familiar, writhing anger. Rowan was standing beside the pianoforte near the front right of the stage, running a hand over the smooth surface, as if it were a prize horse. She hesitated before the magnificent instrument.
It seems like sacrilege to play that thing, she said,
the word echoing loudly in the space.
Since when are you the religious type anyway?
Rowan gave her a crooked smile.
Where should I stand to best hear it?
You might be in for a lot of pain at first.
Self-conscious today, too?
If Lorcan's snooping about, she grumbled, I'd rather he not report back to Maeve that I'm lousy at playing. She pointed to a spot on the stage. There. Stand there and stop talking, you insufferable bastard. He chuckled and moved to the spot she'd indicated. She swallowed as she slid onto the smooth bench and folded back the lid, revealing the gleaming white and black keys beneath. She positioned her feet on the pedals, but made no move to touch the keyboard.
I haven't played since before Nehemia died, she admitted, the words too heavy.
We can come back another day, if you want,
a gentle, steady offer.
His silver hair glimmered in the dim candlelight.
There might not be another day.
And I would consider my life very sad indeed if I never played again.
He nodded and crossed his arms. A silent order.
She faced the keys and slowly set her hands on the ivory. It was smooth and cool and waiting. A great beast of sound and joy about to be awakened. I need to warm up, she blurted, and plunged in without another word, playing as softly as she could. Once she had started seeing the notes in her mind again, when muscle memory had her fingers reaching for those familiar chords, she began. It was not the sorrowful, lovely piece she had once played for Dorian, and it was not the light, dancing melodies she'd played for sport. It was not the complex and clever pieces she had played for Nehemia and Kaol. This piece was a celebration, a reaffirmation of life, of glory, of the pain and beauty in breathing. Perhaps that was why she'd gone to hear it performed every year, after so much killing and torture and punishment, as a reminder of what she was, of what she struggled to keep. Up and up it built, the sound breaking from the pianoforte like the heart song of a god, until Rowan drifted over to stand beside the instrument, until she whispered to him, Now, and the crescendo shattered into the world, note after note after note. The music crashed around them, roaring through the emptiness of the theater. The hollow silence that had been inside her for so many months now overflowed with sound. She brought the piece home to its final explosive triumphant chord. When she looked up, panting slightly, Rowan's eyes were lined with silver, his throat bobbing. Somehow, after all this time, her warrior prince still managed to surprise her. He seemed to struggle for words, but he finally breathed.
Show me. Show me how you did that.
So she obliged him. They spent the better part of an hour seated together on the bench, Aelin teaching him the basics of the pianoforte, explaining the sharps and flats, the pedals, the notes and chords. When Rowan heard someone at last coming to investigate the music, they slipped out. She stopped at the Royal Bank, warning Rowan to wait in the shadows across the street as she again sat in the master's office, while one of his underlings rushed in and out on her business.
She eventually left with another bag of gold. Vital, now that there was one more mouth to feed and body to clothe. And found Rowan exactly where she'd left him, pissed off that she'd refused to let him accompany her. But he'd raised too many questions.
"So you're using your own money to support us?"
Rowan asked as they slipped down a side street. A flock of beautifully dressed young women passed by on the sunny avenue beyond the alley and gaped at the hooded, powerfully built male who stormed past. And then all turned to admire the view from behind. Aelin flashed her teeth at them. "For now," she said to him.
"And what will you do for money later?"
She glanced sidelong at him. "It'll be taken care of."
"By whom?"
"Me."
"Explain."
"You'll find out soon enough." She gave him a little smile that she knew drove him insane. Rowan made to grab her by the shoulder, but she ducked away from his touch. "Uh-uh, better not move too swiftly, or someone might notice." He snarled, the sound definitely not human, and she chuckled. Annoyance was better than guilt and grief. "Just be patient, and don't get your feathers ruffled." Chapter 35. Gods, he hated the smell of their blood. But damn if it wasn't a glorious thing to be covered in when 24 Vog lay dead around him, and good people were finally safe. Drenched in Vog blood from head to toe, Kaol Westfall searched for a clean bit of fabric with which to wipe down his black-stained blade, but came up empty. Across the hidden clearing, Nezrin was doing the same. He'd killed 4, she'd taken down 7. Kaol knew only because he'd been watching her the entire time. She'd paired off with someone else during the ambush. He'd apologized for snapping at her the other night, but she'd just nodded and still teamed up with another rebel. But now, she gave up trying to wipe down her blade and looked toward him. Her midnight eyes were bright, and even with her face splattered in black blood, her smile, relieved, a bit wild with the thrill of the fight, their victory, was beautiful. The word clanged through him. Kaol frowned, and the expression was instantly wiped from her face. His mind was always a jumble after a fight, as if it had been spun around and around and twisted upside down and then given a heavy dose of liquor. But he strode toward her. They'd done this. Together. They'd saved these people. More at once than they'd ever rescued before, and with no loss of life beyond the Vog. Gore and blood were splattered on the grassy forest floor. The only remnants of the decapitated Vog bodies that had already been hauled away and dumped behind a boulder. When they left, they'd paid the body's former owners the tribute of burning them. 3 of his group had set to unchaining the huddled prisoners now seated in the grass. The Vog bastards had stuffed so many of them into the 2 wagons that Kaol had nearly gagged at the smell. Each wagon had only a small barred window high up on the wall, and a man had fainted inside. But all of them were safe now. He wouldn't stop until the others still hidden in the city were out of harm's way as well. A woman reached up with her filthy hands, her nails split and fingertips swollen, as if she'd tried to claw her way out of whatever hellhole she'd been kept in.
"Thank you,"
she whispered, her voice hoarse, probably from screaming that had gone unanswered. Kaol's throat tightened as he gave the woman's hands a gentle squeeze, mindful of her near-broken fingers, and stepped to where Nezrin was now wiping her blade on the grass.
"You fought well,"
he told her.
"I know I did."
Nezrin looked over her shoulder at him.
"We need to get them to the river. The boats won't wait forever."
Fine. He didn't expect warmth or camaraderie after a battle, despite that smile, but...
"Maybe once we're back in Rifthold, we can go for a drink."
He needed one. Badly. Nezrin rose from her crouch, and he fought the urge to wipe a splatter of black blood from her tan cheek. The hair she'd tied back had come loose, and the warm forest breeze set the strands floating past her face.
"I thought we were friends," she said.
"We are friends,"
he said carefully.
"Friends don't spend time with each other only when they're feeling sorry for themselves,
or bite each other's heads off for asking difficult questions.
I told you I was sorry for snapping the other night.
She sheathed her blade. I'm fine with distracting each other for whatever reason, Kaol. But at least be honest about it.
He opened his mouth to object, but maybe she was right. I do like your company, he said. I wanted to go for a drink to celebrate, not brood. And I'd like to go with you.
She pursed her lips. That was the most half-assed attempt at flattery I've ever heard. But fine. I'll join you.
The worst part was that she didn't even sound mad. She genuinely meant it. He could go drinking with or without her, and she wouldn't particularly care. The thought didn't sit well. Personal conversation decidedly over. Nezrin surveyed the clearing, the wagon and the carnage.
Why now? The king has had 10 years to do this. Why the sudden rush to get these people all down to Morath? What's it building to?
Some of the rebels turned their way. Kaol studied the bloody aftermath as if it were a map. Aelin Galathinius's return might have started it, Kaol said, aware of those who listened.
No, Nezrin said simply. Aelin announced herself barely 2 months ago. Something this large. It's been in the works for a long, long time.
Sen, one of the leaders with whom Kaol met regularly, said, We should consider yielding the city. Move to other places where their foothold isn't as secure. Maybe try to establish a border somehow. If Aelin Galathinius is lingering near Rifthold, we should meet with her. Maybe head for Terrasen, push Otterlin out, and hold the line.
We can't abandon Rifthold, Kaol said,
glancing at the prisoners being helped to their feet.
It might be suicide to stay,
Sen challenged. Some of the others nodded their agreement. Kaol opened his mouth, but Nezrin said,
We need to head for the river. Fast.
He gave her a grateful look, but she was already moving. Aelin waited until everyone was asleep, and the full moon had risen, before climbing out of bed, careful not to jostle Rowan. She slipped into the closet and dressed swiftly, strapping on the weapons she'd casually dumped there that afternoon. Neither male had commented when she'd plucked Damaris from the dining table, claiming she wanted to clean it. She strapped the ancient blade onto her back along with Goldrin, the two hilts peeking over either shoulder as she stood in front of the closet mirror and hastily braided back her hair. It was short enough now that braiding had become a nuisance, and the front bits slipped out, but at least it wasn't in her face. She crept from the closet, a spare cloak in hand, past the bed where Rowan's tattooed torso gleamed in the light of the full moon, leaking in from the window. He didn't stir as she snuck from the bedroom, and out of the apartment, no more than a shadow.
Chapter 36 It didn't take long for Aelin to set her trap. She could feel the eyes monitoring her as she found the patrol led by one of the more sadistic Volg commanders. Thanks to Kaol and Nezrin's reports, she knew their new hideouts. What Kaol and Nezrin didn't know, what she had spent these nights sneaking out to track on her own, was which sewer entrances the commanders used when going to speak to one of the word hounds. They seemed to prefer the most ancient waterways to swimming through the filth of the more recent main tunnels. She'd been getting as close as she dared, which usually was not near enough to overhear anything. Tonight, she slipped down into the sewers after the commander, her steps nearly silent on the slick stones, trying to stifle her nausea at the stench. She'd waited until Kaol, Nezrin, and their top lieutenants were out of the city, chasing down those prison wagons, if only so no one would get in her way again. She couldn't risk it. As she walked, keeping far enough behind the Volg commander that he wouldn't hear, she began speaking softly. I got the key, she said,
a sigh of relief passing over her lips. Twisting her voice just as Lysandra had showed her, she replied in a male tenor.
You brought it with you?
Of course I did. Now show me where you wanted to hide it.
Patience,
she said, trying not to smile too much as she turned down a corner, creeping along.
It's just up this way.
On she went, offering whispers of conversation, until she neared the crossroads where the Volg commanders liked to meet with their wordhound overseer, and fell silent. There, she dumped the spare cloak she'd brought, and then backtracked to a ladder leading up to the street. Aelin's breath caught as she pushed against the grate, and it mercifully gave. She heaved herself onto the street, her hands unsteady. For a moment, she contemplated lying there on the filthy, wet cobblestones, savoring the free air around her. But he was too close, so she silently sealed the grate again. It took only a minute before near-silent boots scraped on stone below, and a figure moved past the ladder, heading to where she'd left the cape, tracking her as he'd done all night. As she'd let him do all night. And when Lorkin walked right into that den of Volg commanders and the wordhound that had come to retrieve their reports, when the clash of weapons and roar of dying filled her ears, Aelin merely sauntered down the street, whistling to herself. Aelin was striding down an alley 3 blocks from the warehouse when a force akin to a stone wall slammed her face first into the side of a brick building.
"You little bitch,"
Lorkin snarled in her ear. Both of her arms were somehow already pinned behind her back, his legs digging hard enough into hers that she couldn't move them. "Hello, Lorkin," she said sweetly, turning her throbbing face as much as she could. From the corner of her eye, she could make out cruel features beneath his dark hood, along with onyx eyes and matching shoulder-length hair, and, damn, elongated canines shone far too near her throat. One hand gripped her arms like a steel vise. Lorkin used the other to push her head against the damp brick so hard her cheek scraped.
"You think that was funny?"
"It was worth a shot, wasn't it?" He reeked of blood. That awful, otherworldly Volg blood. He pushed her face a little harder into the wall, his body an immovable force against her.
"I'm going to kill you."
"Ah, about that," she said, and shifted her wrist just enough for him to feel the blade she'd flicked free in the moment before she'd sensed his attack, the steel now resting against his groin. "Immortality seems like a long, long time to go without your favorite body part."
"I'll rip out your throat before you can move."
She pressed the blade harder against him. "Big risk to take, isn't it?" For a moment, Lorkin remained unmoving, still shoving her into the wall with the force of 5 centuries of lethal training. Then cool air nipped at her neck, her back. By the time she whirled, Lorkin was several paces away. In the darkness, she could barely make out the granite-hewn features, but she remembered enough from that day in Dorinel to guess that beneath his hood, the unforgiving face was livid. "Honestly," she said, leaning against the wall, "I'm a little surprised you fell for it. You must think I'm truly stupid."
"Where's Rowan?"
he sneered, his close-fitting dark clothes, armored with black metal at the forearms and shoulders, seemed to gobble up the dim light.
"Still warming your bed?"
She didn't want to know how Lorkin knew that. "Isn't that all you pretty males are good for?" She looked him up and down, marking the many weapons both visible and concealed. Massive. As massive as Rowan and Adian. And utterly unimpressed by her. "Did you kill all of them? There were only 3 by my count."
"There were 6 of them. And one of those stone demons, you bitch. And you knew it."
So he had found a way to kill one of the word hounds. Interesting. And good. "You know, I'm really rather tired of being called that. You'd think 5 centuries would give you enough time to come up with something more creative."
"Come a little closer, and I'll show you just what 5 centuries can do."
"Why don't I show you what happens when you whip my friends, you spineless prick?" Violence danced across those brutal features.
"Such a big mouth for someone without her fire tricks."
"Such a big mouth for someone who needs to mind his surroundings."
Rowan's knife was angled along Lorkin's throat before he could so much as blink. She'd been wondering how long it would take him to find her. He'd probably awakened the moment she pushed back the covers.
"Start talking,"
Rowan ordered Lorkin. Lorkin gripped his sword, a mighty beautiful weapon that she had no doubt had ended many lives on killing fields in distant lands.
You don't want to get into this fight right now. Give me a good reason not to spill your blood,
Rowan said.
If I die, Maeve will offer aid to the King of Otterlin against you.
Bullshit, Aelin spat.
Friends close, but enemies closer, right?
Lorkin said. Slowly, Rowan let go of him and stepped away. All three of them monitored every movement the others made, until Rowan was at Aelin's side, his teeth bared at Lorkin. The aggression pouring off the Fey Prince was enough to make her jumpy.
You made a fatal mistake,
Lorkin said to her.
The moment you showed my queen that vision of you with the key.
He flicked his black eyes to Rowan.
And you, you stupid fool, allying yourself, binding yourself to a mortal queen. What will you do, Rowan, when she grows old and dies? What about when she looks old enough to be your mother? Will you still share her bed? Still, that's enough.
Rowan said softly. She didn't let one flicker of the emotions that shot through her show. Didn't dare to even think about them for fear Lorkin could smell them. Lorkin just laughed.
You think you beat Maeve? She allowed you to walk out of Dorinel. Both of you.
Aelin yawned. Honestly, Rowan, I don't know how you put up with him for so many centuries. 5 minutes and I'm bored to tears.
Watch yourself, girl. Lorkin said. Maybe not tomorrow. Maybe not in a week. But someday you will trip up. And I'll be waiting.
Really? You Fey males and your dramatic speeches. She turned to walk away, a move she could make only because of the prince standing between them. But she looked back over her shoulder, dropping all pretense of amusement, of boredom. Let that killing calm rise close enough to the surface that she knew there was nothing human in her eyes, as she said to Lorkin.
I will never forget, not for one moment, what you did to him that day in Dorinel.
Your miserable existence is at the bottom of my priority list, but one day, Lorkin, she smiled a little,
one day I'll come to claim that debt too. Consider tonight a warning.
Aelin had just unlocked the warehouse door when Rowan's deep voice purred from behind.
Busy night, princess.
She hauled open the door, and the two of them slipped into the near black warehouse, illuminated only by a lantern near the back stairs. She took her time locking the sliding door behind her.
Busy, but enjoyable.
You're going to have to try a lot harder to sneak past me,
Rowan said, the words laced with a growl.
You and Adian are insufferable.
Thank the gods Lorkin hadn't seen Adian, hadn't scented his heritage.
I was perfectly safe.
Lie. She hadn't been sure whether Lorkin would even show up, or whether he would fall for her little trap. Rowan poked her cheek gently, and pain rippled.
Your lucky scraping you is all he did. The next time you sneak out to pick a fight with Lorkin, you will tell me beforehand.
I will do no such thing. It's my damn business, and—
It's not just your business. Not anymore. You will take me along with you the next time.
The next time I sneak out, she seethed. If I catch you following me like some overprotective nursemaid, I will—
You'll what?
He stepped up close enough to share breath with her, his fangs flashing.
In the light of the lantern,
she could clearly see his eyes, and he could see hers as she silently said,
I don't know what I'll do, you bastard, but I'll make your life a living hell for it.
He snarled, and the sound stroked down her skin as she read the unspoken words in his eyes.
Stop being stubborn. Is this some attempt to cling to your independence?
And so what if it is?
She shot back.
Just let me do these things on my own.
I can't promise that,
he said,
the dim light caressing his tan skin, the elegant tattoo. She punched him in the bicep, hurting herself more than him.
Just because you're older and stronger doesn't mean you're entitled to order me around.
It's exactly because of those things that I can do whatever I please.
She let out a high-pitched sound and went to pinch his side, and he grabbed her hand, squeezing it tightly, dragging her a step closer to him. She tilted her head back to look at him. For a moment, alone in that warehouse with nothing but the crates keeping them company, she allowed herself to take in his face, those green eyes, the strong jaw. Immortal, unyielding, blooded with power.
Brute.
Brat.
She loosed a breathy laugh.
Did you really lure Lorcan into a sewer with one of those creatures?
It was such an easy trap that I'm actually disappointed he fell for it. Rowan chuckled.
You never stop surprising me.
He hurt you. I'm never going to forgive that.
Plenty of people have hurt me. If you're going to go after everyone, you'll have a busy life ahead of you.
She didn't smile.
What he said about me getting old?
Don't. Just don't start with that. Go to sleep.
What about you?
He studied the warehouse door.
I wouldn't put it past Lorcan to return the favor you dealt him tonight. He forgets and forgives even less easily than you do. Especially when someone threatens to cut off his manhood.
At least I said it would be a big mistake,
she said with a fiendish grin.
I was tempted to say little.
Rowan laughed, his eyes dancing.
Then you definitely would have been dead.
Chapter 37. There were men screaming in the dungeons. He knew because the demon had forced him to take a walk there, past every cell and rack. He thought he might know some of the prisoners, but he couldn't remember their names. He could never remember their names when the man on the throne ordered the demon to watch their interrogation. The demon was happy to oblige. Day after day after day. The king never asked them any questions. Some of the men cried, some screamed, and some stayed silent, defiant even. Yesterday, one of them, young, handsome, familiar, had recognized him and begged. He'd begged for mercy, insisted he knew nothing, and wept. But there was nothing he could do, even as he watched them suffer. Even as the chambers filled with the reek of burning flesh and the coppery tang of blood. The demon savored it, growing stronger each day it went down there and breathed in their pain. He added their suffering to the memories that kept him company, and let the demon take him back to those dungeons of agony and despair the next day, and the next. Chapter 38. Aelin didn't dare to go back to the sewers, not until she was certain Lorcan was out of the area and the Volg weren't lurking about. The next night, they were all eating a dinner Adian had scraped together from whatever was lying around the kitchen, when the front door opened, and Lysandra breezed in with a chirped hello that had them all releasing the weapons they'd grabbed.
How do you do that?
Adian demanded, as she paraded into the kitchen.
What a miserable-looking meal, was all Lysandra said, peering over Adian's shoulder at the spread of bread, pickled vegetables, cold eggs, fruit, dried meat, and leftover breakfast pastries.
Can't any of you cook?
Aelin, who'd been swiping grapes off Rowan's plate, snorted. Breakfast, it seems, is the only meal any of us are decent at. And this one, she jabbed a thumb in Rowan's direction, only knows how to cook meat on a stick over a fire. Lysandra nudged Aelin down the bench and squeezed onto the end, her blue dress like liquid silk as she reached for some bread.
Pathetic. Utterly pathetic for such esteemed and mighty leaders.
Adian braced his arms on the table.
Make yourself at home, why don't you?
Lysandra kissed the air between them.
Hello, General. Good to see you're looking well.
Aelin would have been content to sit back and watch, until Lysandra turned those up-tilted green eyes toward Rowan.
I don't think we were introduced the other day. Her queenliness had something rather urgent to tell me.
A sly cat's glance in Aelin's direction. Rowan, seated on Adian's right, cocked his head to the side.
Do you need an introduction?
Lysandra's smile grew.
I like your fangs, she said sweetly.
Aelin choked on her grape.
Of course Lysandra did.
Rowan gave a little grin that usually sent Aelin running.
Are you studying them so you can replicate them when you take my form, shapeshifter?
Aelin's fork froze in midair.
Bullshit,
Adian said. All amusement had vanished from the courtesan's face.
Shapeshifter. Holy gods.
What was fire magic or wind and ice compared to shapeshifting? Shifters, spies and thieves and assassins able to demand any price for their services, the bane of courts across the world. So feared that they'd been hunted nearly to extinction even before Otterlin had banned magic. Lysandra plucked up a grape, examined it, and then flicked her eyes to Rowan.
Perhaps I'm just studying you to know where to sink my fangs if I ever get my gifts back.
Rowan laughed. It explained so much.
You and I are nothing but beasts wearing human skins.
Lysandra turned her attention to Aelin.
No one knows this. Not even Aerobin.
Her face was hard. A challenge and a question lay in those eyes.
Secrets.
Nehemia had kept secrets from her, too. Aelin didn't say anything. Lysandra's mouth tightened as she turned to Rowan.
How do you know?
A shrug. Even as Aelin felt his attention on her and knew he could read the emotions biting at her.
I met a few shifters, centuries ago. Your scents are the same.
Lysandra sniffed at herself, but Adian murmured,
So that's what it is.
Lysandra looked at Aelin again.
Say something.
Aelin held up a hand.
Just give me a moment.
A moment to sort out one friend from another. The friend she had loved and who had lied to her at every chance. And the friend she had hated and who she had kept secrets from herself. Hated until love and hate had met in the middle, fused by loss. Adian asked,
How old were you when you found out?
Young. 5 or 6. I knew even then to hide it from everyone. It wasn't my mother, so my father must have had the gift. She never mentioned him, or seemed to miss him.
Gift. Interesting choice of words. Rowan said,
What happened to her?
Lysandra shrugged.
I don't know. I was 7 when she beat me, then threw me out of the house. Because we lived here, in this city. And that morning, for the first time, I'd made the mistake of shifting in her presence. I don't remember why, but I remember being startled enough that I changed into a hissing tabby right in front of her.
Shit, Adian said. So you're a full-powered shifter,
Rowan said.
I'd known what I was for a long time. From even before that moment, I knew that I could change into any creature. But magic was outlawed here. And everyone, in every kingdom, was distrustful of shapeshifters. How could they not be?
A low laugh.
After she kicked me out, I was left on the streets. We were poor enough that it was hardly different, but I spent the first 2 days crying on the doorstep. She threatened to turn me into the authorities, so I ran. And I never saw her again. I even went back to the house months later, but she was gone. Moved away.
She sounds like a wonderful person, Adian said. Lysandra hadn't lied to her. Nehemia had lied outright, kept things that were vital. What Lysandra was, they were even. After all, she hadn't told Lysandra she was queen.
How'd you survive?
Aelin asked at last, her shoulders relaxing. A 7-year-old on the streets of Rifthold doesn't often meet a happy end. Something sparked in Lysandra's eyes. And Aelin wondered if she had been waiting for the blow to fall, waiting for the order to get out.
I used my abilities. Sometimes I was human. Sometimes I wore the skins of other street children, with high standing in their packs. Sometimes I became an alley cat or a rat or a gull. And then I learned that if I made myself prettier, if I made myself beautiful, when I begged for money, it came far faster. I was wearing one of those beautiful faces the day magic fell, and I've been stuck in it ever since.
So, This face, Aelin said, isn't your real face? Your real body?
No. And what kills me is that I can't remember what my real face was. That's the danger of shifting. That you would forget your real form, because it's the memory of it that guides the shifting. I remember being plain as a dormouse, but I don't remember if my eyes were blue or gray or green. I can't remember the shape of my nose or my chin. And it was a child's body, too. I don't know what I would look like now, as a woman.
Aelin said, and this was the form that Aerobin spotted you in a few years later. Lysandra nodded and picked at an invisible fleck of lint on her dress.
If magic is free again, would you be wary of a shapeshifter?
So carefully phrased, so casually asked, as if it weren't the most important question of all. Aelin shrugged and gave her the truth. I'd be jealous of a shapeshifter. Shifting into any form I please would come in rather handy, she considered it. A shapeshifter would make a powerful ally, and an even more entertaining friend. Adian mused.
It would make a difference on a battlefield once magic is freed.
Rowan just asked,
did you have a favorite form?
Lysandra's grin was nothing short of wicked.
I liked anything with claws and big, big fangs.
Aelin swallowed her laugh. Is there a reason behind this visit, Lysandra? Or are you just here to make my friends squirm? All amusement faded, as Lysandra held up a velvet sack that sagged with what looked to be a large box.
What you requested.
The box thumped as she set the sack onto the worn wooden table. Aelin slid the sack toward herself, even as the males raised their brows and subtly sniffed at the box within.
Thank you.
Lysandra said,
Aerobin is going to call in your favor tomorrow, to be delivered the following night. Be ready.
Good. It was an effort to keep her face blank. Adian leaned forward, glancing between them.
Does he expect only Aelin to deliver?